the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science on www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. You get to hear, you get to talk to Wake Radio and Shaziz Radio at the same time. So this morning I got on YouTube and I've been thinking about a whole lot of different stuff, and I got on YouTube and I put in the search box, I put in free electricity. And I got about 1,040,000 results. And the majority of all the ones that come up to the front of the free electricity are people out there that basically do these little nifty tricks, like they'll stick batteries inside of fake light bulbs, or hide batteries inside little deals with coils and run light bulbs and all kinds of stuff. So essentially, if you talk about free electricity in this world, it's just about pretty much you're a nutcase right out of the gate. That's all there is to it, because there's so many scam artists out there like Keshi and all his cronies. It's just crazy, you know. And it's just, to me, we've fought this battle since electricity was invented, you know, back when Edison and Tesla was doing the war between AC current and DC current. And we fought this battle over and over and over again. Electric bills continued to go up and up and up, and now they're going to continue to go up even higher yet. Well, we got to sit around and we got to listen to the governments of the world and the people of the world complaining about the carbon emissions on the so-called global warming / climate change / climate disruption. One of the biggest scams perpetrated in the history of time, as far as I'm concerned. And it makes me sick to my stomach. But while we sit around and listen to all these people talk about save the planet and doing this and that to try to, you know, reduce carbon footprint and pollution and all that kind of stuff, and you got all these knuckleheads out there just trying to scam people for views, or, you know, make a mockery of people who talk about free energy, then, you know, your back is against the wall. As far as I'm concerned, at this point in the game, it isn't never going to happen. We will never, ever in our lifetime see free energy. You know, we just won't see it. You know, if somebody comes across with a great device that is provable and it actually does what they say it's going to do, number one, they're either going to try to sell it out to the highest bidder, because everyone out there, you know, wants to get rich, and so they're not going to open source it to anybody. And then the ones who are willing to open source it to people will be the ones that end up like Stan Myers or any of the other inventors out there that come up with better running machinery, like Stan Myers running car on water. And so you got idiots out there that are hindering the process of showing people and proving free energy. You've got governments out there hindering the process of showing free energy. You've got utility companies out there everywhere, from the oil industry to the coal industry to the electrical industry, whatever. All of them have something to lose by you proving that energy's free. Now, I could sit around till I'm blue in the face, till I finally drop over dead from old age, and I can continue to repeat myself over and over and over again and shout it to all four points of the compass. But let me point something out. I've been shouting out about the global warming fraud for over 40 years. 40 years I've been sitting here telling them the science is bogus. 40 years I told them the science don't add up. What they taught me in school shows me that everything that they say as far as man-made climate change is fake. It's a fraud. It's a way to steal more money from honest, hardworking people.
Amen.
And so if it takes me 40 years to try to get that message out there to the world, and they're starting, people are starting to catch on. They're starting to say, wait a second, you know, 40 years ago they were talking about this whole deal, and it still hasn't, doomsday hasn't came upon us, then maybe something to this. And then when they get caught cheating on the paperwork on there, on the numbers, and, you know, it, the more they... Yeah, they used to say they give somebody enough rope, they'll hang themselves. And that's essentially what they've done, Raymond.
Shaziz, to a point to prove what you're trying to say, the biggest single electronic scam ever pulled, ever, was 16 years ago with Y2K.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one, too. That one was a real hoot.
Shazam, it was such a big deal. Such a big deal. I said, whoa, what can this possibly be? Everybody's so worried about it. All I did was go out to a yard sale, buy an old computer for $10, bring it home, and reset the time on the thing to 1999, December the 31st. And guess what happened come midnight? Nothing. It rolled over.
Well, I knew enough about computers back in that day to realize that, you know, they already had it resolved before all that. Maybe a couple older systems would mess up, but it wouldn't be near the calamity they was trying to say.
It wasn't the computer chip Y2K. They were trying to say that on the turn of the century, I mean, there were people predicting that doomsday was the turn of the century, that the world would cease to exist, or it would explode, or water would rise out of the ocean. I mean, there were all kinds of scams. All kinds. It was the biggest money-making scam, electronic scam ever pulled on the public. I mean, the entire world swallow this crap. It wasn't just people in the United States. People throughout the world swallow this junk. Man, I mean, come on, people. You're being duped every day of your life. I mean, Shazam keeps saying that global warming is not real. I keep saying it is real, but it's natural. It is not man-made. It does happen. It's happened many times. They've proven that the Ice Age has happened 5 different times. As far back as they can go. I mean, come on. In the 13 or 1400s, the Little Ice Age, Big Freeze, it snowed in Canada in August. Come on. People were dying of hunger and starvation all throughout Europe because they didn't change with the weather. They were the same crops. The crops wouldn't grow. It came rotting in the field. People were starving to death. However, in England, they're used to cold weather. So they just started having a party. The Thames River froze over so thick, they had carnivals out on the Thames River. I mean, it's in front of the London Tower. Give me a break. Global warming is real. It is happening, but it's not man-made. And all you have to do is take it in consideration and adjust your lifestyle for it. I mean, you know, it's going to get warmer.
Well, we live on an ever-changing planet.
Because yes, ever-changing. Every day it changes, you know?
But for somebody to sit around and fear-monger and talk about how climate change or climate disruption or global warming or whatever is going to cause all these catastrophic deals, basically, they don't know jack about science at all, right?
No joke.
If I spent all those years in school being taught things out of the books, and then it's back when they really used to teach science, you actually did experiments. I'm echoing somewhere.
I'm going to tell you something. For man to try to correct global warming or an ice age, for man to try to think that he is causing it and he is responsible for changing it is like walking out to Lake Mead on Hoover Dam and spitting in Lake Mead trying to raise the level. Come on, people.
Yeah, well, the spraying crud in the air, you know, whether it is or isn't a chemtrail, it's another, they say, so-called conspiracy, all right? They spray chemicals in the air. Doggone people, there's documents out there proving it. Government declassified documents. There's companies out there that advertise that they do weather modifications. They say they got a 180-mile range where they can mess around with the weather. All right, silver iodide seeded in clouds. Look it up. It's a real deal. But
that was done back in the 1950s, wasn't it?
Yeah, and they sprayed chemicals over weeds to kill off the plants, so the enemy wouldn't have to hide, have a place to hide in Vietnam. Remember Agent Orange?
Agent Orange, you're right.
Look, I'm just trying to say we got our backs against the wall in the alternative energy community because we've got idiots out there trying to monopolize on making money off of the process, trying to sell people all kinds of doggone bogus free energy plans and stuff. And I'm sitting here, I'm going crazy because it's driving me nuts. I look outside every day, the sun's out there, You go out there, you sit out there too long for 15, 20 minutes longer than you should, and you're going to be sunburnt, you're going to be fried to a crisp. So tell me there ain't no free energy, and I'm going to tell you that you just don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Exactly.
There's wind blowing all the time. There's thermal vents all over this planet. There's static electricity, hydroelectricity. We live in an electric universe. We live in a pool, a sea, a vast sea of energy. And because...
Again, frequency.
Yeah, because people ain't figured out how to tap into it, you know... We already know how to tap into it, doggone it. See, you got me backtracking on everything I say. That's why I get so doggone mad and irate about all this, you know, cashy business and all the other knuckleheads out there trying to do all this stuff, man. Because I'm sitting here trying to justify what I'm trying to say, what I can see right before my very eyes. Go out there and watch. Look at that doggone sun. Now, they say that this Earth has been around here for billions of years, all right? We went from little squiggly things in the water all the way up to fish, to lizards, to monkeys, and now we're man. And we've been around for billions of years, all right? And so that means that sun has been burning for billions of years. Now, where in the Sam Harry heck, where is the deadline for something to be over unity? For something to be free energy. How many billions of years do you got to go through before you can classify it as free energy? The sun's still ticking, ain't it?
Yeah.
If it lasts my lifetime, that's free energy.
I think that's why we call it bad science.
Yeah. I want to take and get a rubber chicken and run around and slap every communist-loving, utopian, scientist, guru, global warming freak off this planet with the vengeance.
Really?
Because it drives me insane. I mean, we got... my biggest issue that I've got right now is I go around, I check out all these old junk devices, like microwave ovens, got a lot of stuff you can use to generate power. And I find all these different alternative uses for things. I know about hydrogen technology. I can build a hydrogen cell. And I could actually, if I had the right stuff, build a water car just like Stan Myers did. But my biggest issue is I can't get nothing manufactured properly. I have to duct tape and baling wire it together, you know. And so since I'm not going to ask people for money, because I don't ever want to become off as a scam artist, I don't want anybody to say, well, he's only using his YouTube to get views, you know, to make money. Well, if I set out to get rich off of YouTube, I'm going to tell you what, right here now, folks, I failed miserably. All right? I'm still broke as a joke.
I can vouch for that.
So, you know, YouTube...
You start getting money off of YouTube, all of a sudden they change everything, and you're back to making $100.
Yeah, every 3 months.
Yeah, so don't worry about it. Yeah.
But my point is this, I'm not gonna put no donation button on my site and say, please donate money to me to do this or that. But what I'm thinking about doing, literally, is renting out my brain. If you've got a company out there, I will tell you what, I will make the best deal that you could ever possibly imagine. I will design something for you. I got thousands of designs. I will design something for you that you can patent in your name and you can sell and make $1 million. The only stipulation is you have to give me the very first working prototype so that I can prove to everybody exactly what I said. I will sign as many devices over to as many companies out there who are willing to manufacture the first prototype belongs to me. And the rest of it, you can sell, you can patent, you can do whatever you want with. And I'll do this all day long, every day, for the rest of my entire life to raise the funds to actually get the doggone things that I talk about built.
Shaziz, I want to tell people out there something. Ladies and gentlemen, this man ain't joking. He is not joking one bit. I tried my best to donate some money to him to help support this program, and he wouldn't have it. I literally had to trick him into taking my money. So if you want to help him out, hey, we're not asking you to, but if there's anybody out there that would really like to help him, do it. Just don't put a return address on the check, all right? Huh. He'll turn it down. And he needs help, but he won't ask for it.
Well, that's because I don't want to be labeled as a scam artist, man. Exactly. I'm not out there trying to tell people you got to love your reactor or you don't get free electricity.
Oh, hey, that's the whole thing. I had to scam you into taking his money, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I laughed all the way home. Oh, my God. Well, I literally had to scam the man to take a donation. It wasn't a lot of money either.
The pop-pop boat deal that we've been talking about, I know, once again, it sounds like just a toy, but I threw a link up there in the chat room. I think it was Ludic Science did a review of a little steam engine. Now, if you click on this video and you look at this little steam engine, all right, it's made out of plastic, and it's got a couple little, it's got a little tin can boiler, and it runs off of, like, alcohol. The Stirling engine, they got toy Stirling engines out there. All these things, this here is not just a steam engine, it's a motor generator, steam generator. It generates a little bit of electricity. So, it ain't like we ain't got the technology. You can get electricity, you can build a steam engine, you can build a wood gasifier, you can build a hydrogen cell. There's so many different ways and so many different fuels in order to do the same exact thing, to, shake up some electrons and get some doggone electricity flowing. All right? So, it ain't about that we don't have the technology to do it. It's about that it costs so doggone much to get anything made. Everyone out there, wants to get rich. They want to, be wealthy and... if it weren't for greed in this world, if we could take all of our combined resources and pull them together, then we could actually build generators that everybody out there could actually afford, and they would be efficient generators.
Yeah.
If there's a guy that built a carburetor that'll go 100 to 200 miles an hour and it's not in your car right now, you should be asking why.
100 to 200 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you should be asking, why ain't that in my car? Because you can't do that with a modern day engine. And these engines that we have today, as incredible as they are, they're being held back by forces unknown. Because you watch these doggone people out there like the street racers. They know how to get in there and they know how to tune them doggone computers to get the most efficiency and the most power out of those engines.
Yeah.
And what in tarnation is he doing, man? Is he building a tape machine?
No. Yeah, you caught me. I'm actually doing something again.
Anyway, all I'm saying is, it takes money to make money in the doggone world. I need to add Steve to the call here.
Hey, all right, cool, Steve.
Okay, this is the portion of the show where y'all should be jaw-jacking because I'm like, I'm trying to add somebody in there. It's terrible for radio, man.
You were talking about the gasoline vapor, people running their vehicles on gasoline vapor.
Yeah.
I did that in the early 70s. I ran I had a little deal to measure gasoline in CCs. I ran a 4-horsepower, 4-cubic-inch, Bridge & Stratton lawnmower engine out of idle for 1 minute, and it burnt 55 cc's of gasoline. I then turned around and took a 200 cubic inch 6-cylinder Rambler and built my own carburetor. I actually used a 1-gallon plastic milk jug. I think it was about a 16 or 18 inch piece of quarter inch copper tubing and a 3-foot piece of 3/8 inch rubber hose and just a pinch or two of corking. And I made this carburetor and put it on that engine, that 6-cylinder engine, 200 cubic inches, not 4 cubic inches, and ran it for 20 minutes. Measured it, and I had burnt less than 5 cc's of gasoline. And the whole time, I had the headlights on so that the alternator would be actually generating electricity running the headlights. Think about that a minute, folks.
There he is. I see.
Gasoline won't burn. It has to turn into fumes before it can burn. So to squirt gasoline directly into your cylinders is ridiculous.
Yeah, you gotta have a vapor.
Did we get you in here, Steve?
No, I'm a figment of your imagination.
All right. You know, those figments of my imagination, they like seem so real.
Yeah, they do.
So I got an active imagination.
There's nothing wrong with that, my friend.
Well, look, I've been out here just talking about, I'm going to rent my brain out to any company out there that wants to build things. I will give you the complete control, patent, copyrights, all that, all the catches. I get the very first prototype of every single thing that I design. And the rest of it's yours. What?
That's cheap rent, because that's all you're asking to be paid.
Yep.
They supply the material and the tools. You come up with the idea, you build it, it belongs to them. It's just what you build, the first prototype is yours. That's cheap rent on a smart brain.
Well, there you go, folks. You pass that on to any company out there that's troubleshooting a design or something like that. Send them my direction. I get the very first prototype. They get all the rights to it and all the money, and I'll be a happy camper, and they'll be rich.
Well, she says, my wife tried to rent my body out, and the Salvation Army offered me a bed for the night, so...
Well, I don't think I'm going to...
I hope you have better success.
My old lady's trying to sell mine, not rent it.
I'm not going to go out there and prostitute myself. I'm not saying that, but...
Well, no, you have to be paid for that.
My wife made a necklace for me out of 5 $100 bills and put it around my neck, and then she put a for sale sign on me for $100. She said, if you're going to sell something, she's going to sell something worth something.
Hey, Raymond, she's not a government contractor, is she?
No, not really, but she thinks like one.
Now, how much does the government pay for a hammer these days?
I think it's $365.82.
All right, here's an idea. Let's go to Walmart and let's buy up all their hammers, and then we'll take them to the government and sell them for half that price.
There you go.
Yeah, but is it a left-handed or a right-handed hammer? That's the
Whoa, Steve, you got a point there.
Hammer. It's how much they pay in order before they can actually use the hammer.
Right.
You're testing, they have to pay. Yeah, they have to pay for not just the testing, but the paperwork that goes with the testing.
How do you test a hammer?
Wait a minute. We do exactly the same thing the government does. We falsify the test papers.
Yeah. This
they falsify the papers all the time. We do the same thing. Big deal. We tell them we did.
My hammers will drive 10 times the nail if you actually use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
If you never watched The Karate Kid, you can put a nail in straight with one hit.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, with your finger.
One hit per nail. Keep your thumbs out of the way. Anyway, I get frustrated, folks, because here we are. I'm sick and tired of talking about it. Everybody out there wanted to talk about it. There ain't no such thing as free energy, and I'm sorry, I'm going to probably be the rudest person and the most hated person in this world today, because I'm just going to flat out say it. If you think there ain't no such thing as free energy, you're an idiot. That's it. Plain and simple. You're stupid. You ain't spent a single time studying science. You ain't never looked up at the sun. You ain't never had a bad hair day from the wind. You ain't never been totally washed up by the water whenever a big giant wave comes slopping over the ocean. Or you ain't never been out in downpour of rain. where there is tons and tons and tons, a plethora of hydrogen and oxygen molecules emanating from the sky in the form of precipitation.
Right. You know, just to back you up, Shaziz, I've said this 100 times, but this one saying just backs you all the way, and that is, if people would just think about it, there is no such thing as energy that is not free.
That's it. I mean, you're a highly flammable gas and a highly implosive gas combined together making water is dumping on your house every single day.
Yeah.
Now imagine if you had some sort of electrolysis process right above your house to give you hydrogen on demand, you'd burn your own house down because it's too much rain.
I have to say that wasn't particularly rude, but I would like to offer some eloquence without profanity.
Can we do that?
I can do that. Yes, I'm a wordsmith. If you really don't think that it's possible to create energy from resources around you, then you really should enter like the Village Idiot competition up against Forrest Gump, because you'll surely give him a run for his money.
Well, you did use a foul word there.
What?
Create.
All right. Oh, yes. I forgot. Yeah, you need to pay a lot of people money to create stuff, don't you?
Exactly.
You don't create energy.
No, you just change it from one short form to another, or one place to another, or one direction to another. That's it. All you can do with energy is change it.
Well, that's the whole thing. Even in their laws of physics, they themselves tell you in their own laws of physics that energy is free. They just said it, you know?
Yeah.
Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. All we're doing is tapping into it.
Exactly.
Well, do you know that most political bodies around the planet, whether you want to call them the Dáil in Ireland, the Parliament in England, the Senate in America, they've got this really great conversion system between taxpayers' money and hot air.
Yeah. They make a lot of money off of a lot of cheap talk. Hey, how in the heck do I become a politician? Because politicians seem to get rich.
First off, you have to learn how to tell a big old convincing lie.
Well, I'm out. Do I like kids and babies? Why do I get shot down by the very first deal in the plan there, Raymond?
Mm-hmm.
You asked them, talk about what do I want to make a convincing lie? Well, you know, I'm not a liar, so what the heck? I'm out there, and the reason why I wouldn't be a good drug dealer is because my very first sale would be to a cop.
There you go.
and if I was robbing the bank, you know, I'd get busted the very first time. It don't matter what crime I did. Like if I did my first burglary, it'd be like when I got busted, they'd be like, "How long you been burglarizing houses?" And I look at my watch, say, "Oh, about 5 minutes." So you're not very good at it, are you? Nope. How long you been selling drugs?
Look at the problem you have with all these naysayers, Shaziz. Because you're talking the truth. They expect for people on radio show and science to tell them lies. And that's why they think you're lying when you're talking about free energy. That's how stupid people are. They want to believe a lie. So if you're not lying, then they can't believe you.
What was you about to say, Steve?
Well, there was an obscure case of a burglar in Italy in the 1980s that used to break into people's houses and do interior design.
So he was, like, doing them a favor?
Well, you know, they'd come back and the whole place would be completely remodeled.
Wow.
It took a long time for somebody to report him to the police, but I think that was the shag pole carpets and the like African love masks. I don't think they really appreciated that one very much.
Well, but,
the point I'm trying to make with that, is, you know, there are many different ways of thinking about things, and just because you're looking at things in a different way, it doesn't mean to say it's wrong, because it's not the status quo.
Well, what Raymond was saying there about telling the doggone truth it's true, because if you go out there and let's say today I decide to go ahead and put something out there right in front of everybody's face, right underneath their nose, I show it to them. I say, look, this is how it works. Everything works fine, right? Well, first off, they're not going to believe it, because there's been so many scam artists prior to me, you know, a.k.a. Keshi, you idiot.
All right. Love your generator.
You got to love your reactor, or if you're
you
a
like
jerk.
Making you like don't you?
Yes.
if you don't see so many people riding you.
Well, pretty much if somebody pretty much insinuates if you're a jerk, you don't get no free energy, then I say that how is this doggone free energy, this magic device that he makes, how does it know whether or not you're a jerk or not? Has it been to attitude school or something like that, you know?
Right.
All right, well, those are just warning signs to look for, but... Doggone it, if you sit there and you try to show people stuff, it's like the sun, for example. It's so over their head that they don't understand what it is you're talking about. But you walk outside in their bikini or their mankini or whatever and lay down in the sun and fry themselves to a crisp, and they're like, oh, well, there ain't no such thing as free energy.
Right.
Really? Go to the tanning shop instead next time. Pay somebody to use some lights to give you melanoma instead of whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Fortunately, most tanning booths in Europe are now banned.
Well, there you go, man. But somebody was making money off of it when all they had to do, if they really wanted to suntan, was go outside and do some work in the garden or something like that.
Not in the Northern Hemisphere, my friend. Believe me.
Is it too cold out there?
Well, when you have 365 days of rain in a country like Ireland, getting a suntan is usually between 2:30 to 4:30 on July the 5th.
Yeah, but if you're a guy who likes suntans and you don't like it being raining all the time, that's what's so wonderful about this world, is because you can literally get up and move. You know, hey, yeah. Move to the desert. It's nice.
Sure, I'm living out in Equatorial Asia, and I'm born in the UK.
Yeah.
You can go somewhere if you really want to. If that's what's in your heart, that you want to see a different part of the world, see some different cultures, come up with some new ideas.
And if you want a buffet of crappy weather, move to Missouri. Alright, one day it'll be raining, the next day it'll be snowing, the next day you'll be sweating your booty off, and if you don't like the weather, wait another 5 or 10 minutes. It's going to change.
Well, that is the kind of joke in the West, isn't it? If you don't like the weather, wait 20 minutes.
Yeah. So, hey, man, if you can't find it in this world, you're not looking hard enough. You mean, you can get on there and you can Google up stuff. You can find it on eBay. You could look, I've had a machine that it was a hot stamping machine that we used back whenever I was working with my stepfather and his trophy company. This hot stamp machine was made back in the early 1900s, all right? And we didn't think we'd ever be able to find a replacement element for it. Turns out that company was still in business, and they still had some of the original elements on the shelf, waiting for somebody to buy them. So, you know, if you can't find it out there, and if somebody can't make it, then it can't be got, period. You know? If you don't like the weather, get up and move to some place where you do like the weather. If you want,
around waiting for it to change.
Yeah.
I was in Beaumont, Texas many, many, many years ago, 2 a.m. in the morning, standing outside back when they had payphones, talking to my girlfriend up in Decatur, Illinois. She says, how's the weather there? I said, well, I'm outside. The only thing I've got on my whole body is a pair of Bermuda shorts. I'm here barefooted. Bermuda shorts, no shirt, and it's 74 degrees. She said, USOB. I said, why? What's the weather like up there? She turned, looked out the window. She said, it's 30 below zero, and the wind's blowing 30 miles an hour, and there's 3 feet of snow on the ground, and there's a blizzard outside.
Well, go to the Philippines.
I haven't finished. So I go back to home, or rather my camper trailer, a bit, because I was traveling with a boomer then. And got up in the morning, I went to work, 7 o'clock, sun shining, beautiful day. I mean, it's like 76, 78 degrees. 10:30 comes around, it starts snowing. 11:30 comes around. The mayor of Beaumont, Texas, gets on local radio and declares an emergency. Everyone is to go home, and he swore if anybody caught on the street after 1 o'clock would be arrested and taken to jail.
Man.
The snow was building up like you wouldn't believe. So help me, I swear to you, the next morning, went to work, had a little bit of snow and ice on the road. By 10 o'clock, there was no snow anywhere. Welcome to Texas. If you don't like the weather, leave or just stick around, because it's going to change.
Well, go to the Philippines, and you'll watch on just any given day, there won't be a cloud in the sky. All right, and then one second you're walking across a perfectly dry deal, and the sun's out, and oh, what a wonderful day. And the next thing you know, there was a cloud running there real quick and dumping, just like it was dumping a bucket of water right on your head. I mean, a torrential downfall. It'll last probably about maybe a minute or so.
Right.
And then, bam, it's gone again. Now...
Yeah. And 20 minutes later, you're bone dry.
Yeah. So, you know, I've seen it, man.
Just don't wear clothes that have colors that run.
Well, then that means be real careful about what you buy on the market out there, because some of their airbrushed shirts that they buy, if you get them wet, they'll run.
It's like a temporary tattoo on your body.
Yeah.
I had a t-shirt with the American flag on it, and it said, "These colors don't run."
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyway, I like I said, on this alternative energy deal, if you guys really want it done, let's get together and do it. I'm asking anybody out there on this doggone planet, let's just do it, you know? Look, there's guys out there. I posted some videos in the chat room down there of people that does experiments and stuff. Ryan Abrams did a really cool deal that reminded me of my neodymium magnet accelerator. He's got this one magnet that's spinning around in a jar. It's just pretty cool. You go over and check out Ryan Abrams at Abrams Lab on YouTube and see his latest video that he put out there. And, you know, some of these guys out there, they got really good skills. You know, Deeds over there, when he puts something together, it's beautiful, you know. And if you want to see some good, honest research, go over and check out Zero Labs over there. You know, Zero Fossil Fuel. And there's some links underneath the chat room to his deal over there. Russ at RWG Research, go check him out. Go check out Terry Woodruff and... Tin Man and all the man. I'll tell you what,
Tin Man.
There are some really good alternative energy researchers out there on YouTube. There's some knuckleheads out there that are trying to sell you stuff and scam you into believing they found the key to free energy, when in reality all they're doing is showing you how to pull the wool over somebody's eyes.
You know, see, the thing that really haunts me constantly, I mean almost day and night, is how people take these books, they go to school, go to college, study engineering, blah, 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 blah. They learn all of these formulas, and to get to my point is, I read somewhere that 1 horsepower used to convert something into electricity, like running a turbine or whatever, is
746 watts.
Okay, now think about this a minute. You can't get out and you can get back all the energy that you put in if you do it right. So they're figuring on using a gasoline or diesel motor and running it to turn a turbine or whatever to make electricity. What I'm saying is, make the electricity, right, using a solar panel or whatever, split the water into hydrogen and oxygen, under pressure, use the pressure to push the water way the heck up in the air, then use the weight of that water coming down to make electricity, and guess what? You did not burn one drop of hydrogen or oxygen. So now you've made a lot of electricity, and you recuperate some of the electricity you use. Now you burn the hydrogen oxygen and make electricity. Duh. They say that the energy that you use to make hydrogen oxygen, the hydrogen oxygen will not produce the same amount of energy. But I'm saying don't burn it.
Well, you hit on a key right there, man, because, you know, for one thing, like, you take for example your house. It, maybe you're up into kilowatts. How many kilowatts per day that you actually burn in order to run everything that you're running? You know, I'm always getting these knuckleheads that say, "Well, you know, like that one I showed them about spinning up a hard drive. Well, you had to use this much energy in order to get that much energy out of it, so that's inefficient." Well,
that wasn't
what I was trying to show them.
Exactly.
But the deal is, if you know how much energy that you actually need, then move that much energy to the spot where you need it. It's that simple. You know, we're not trying to get out more than we put in. We're not even trying to defy the laws of physics as they're written. All we're doing is changing the energy to move it, you know, in a more efficient manner.
Exactly.
The doggone Stirling engine, that little bitty toy that I got that basically you put a little alcohol burner under there and it heats up a glass tube and works off a temperature difference. It's not over unity. And matter of fact, the fuel that it takes to burn that, some of that energy is wasted because it goes right up into the air. Now, that little Stirling engine could actually be more efficient if you put some sort of housing to trap that heat and recirculate that heat back down in there, sort of like, you know, using a catalytic converter in your car, you know? But if you're not trying to be efficient, then you're not going to be efficient. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
The biggest, losses.
For example,
good Stirling engine that is actually useful, and it is a low temperature differential Stirling engine. It's shaped like the top of your head for the inner side, or the bottom, and then it's got a displacer that goes up and down, and is still shaped about the same. And then another plate on the outside that goes over it so that the displacer goes up and matches when it's at the top. That way, you got a low temperature differential Stirling engine, which will work off the heat of your head. And when you piss Dad off and he's wearing it, that thing would just start hauling. And you'll know that it's not time to piss Dad off.
Yeah, put a beanie fan on top of it.
Yeah, that thing starts hauling, and you know, oops, okay.
Right, my point is, you take a water-cooled gasoline engine, right, and you use it to turn a generator to make electricity. So, for example, it's 1 horsepower, so you're going to make 743 watts of electricity. Now you take your Stirling engine and you take your hot water from your engine that's cooling and keep it from burning up, and you run your Stirling engine. Now you take your exhaust and you make it square and you line it with Peltier devices. And then at the actual exhaust point, you put a small fan, turn it there, because the pressure coming out of the exhaust will turn a small fan, making it even more electricity. So in honest to God reality, how much electricity will 1 horsepower of gasoline make?
It's mind-boggling.
I've proven the point. The gasoline engine is so inefficient that they don't lie. They tell you the truth. That a 1 horsepower gasoline engine can only make 700 watts, the way it's designed and how it's used. But people like you and me and other people that believe in free energy, we just need to build a device to collect it, will take that motor and alter it.
The energy produced in the piston, only 5% of it makes it to your rear wheels.
Exactly.
Well, not only that, I even missed out on it. I didn't think about this a while back, but you know how much your doggone muffler vibrates?
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain point, it'll vibrate until it finds some sort of weak spot in like a shielding or something, and you'll get that annoying rattle when you're driving down the road that because the muffler's vibrating.
Right. So, no, sure this. That annoying rattle when you're driving down the road is a punk with facial piercings.
Well, hook some positive electrics to his face and light up a headlamp so he don't bash his face when he in the dark or something.
Hell me.
I don't know why people could fall face first off and look like they fall face first off into a tackle box and still try to prove to the world that they're intelligent. I don't understand that.
It's the beauty of freedom of expression.
You know, what gets me is these young kids, they get 250 tattoos all over their body, their face, and everything. And they did all this body piercing and weird-ass haircuts with different colors and all kinds of stuff like that. And then they wonder why they can't get a job.
Well, there you go, man. We don't have an energy crisis. We've never had an energy crisis.
A stupidity crisis.
What we got is a lack of common sense crisis.
There you go.
You got to lose the piercing, son. We don't care if you got Zodiac people. When it's all hardware, we just ain't doing it.
And here's another thing. When on the internal combustion engine, if you initially have to have some sort of gas or something that's really highly volatile in order to get it started. But why isn't there a system set up to where you got a water tank on one side and a small gas tank on the other? And then instead of running continuously on gas, get that engine up to operating temperature and then start injecting water into the system.
Yeah, and not water, but water mist.
Yeah. So, there you go. You'd only be using part of the gas just enough to get it up to temperature. Once it's up to temperature, in a diesel engine, you don't have spark plugs in a diesel engine, all right? There's no combustion like in an internal combustion engine, like a gasoline engine. All you do with the diesel engine is when you first start it up, you hit the switch and the glow plugs will get that cylinder hot. Once that cylinder's hot and you start building up compression as you're turning the starter over, the compressed air inside there and the heat from the glow plug will literally begin to burn the fuel. All right, once that fuel's burning, the expansion and contraction, the exhaust and intake portion of the deal is what runs a diesel engine. That's why you get that nifty little sound inside there where it sounds like it's dieseling. Remember that term dieseling? Whenever your car's not running properly,
right, you get that. Right. Your timing's off. Yeah.
And so that's how that runs. So there ain't no reason why you have to, burn gasoline in order to do this. You could actually put glow plugs in an internal combustion engine. All you need to do is bring that doggone operating temperature up high enough that when you shoot a fine mist of water in there, it instantaneously flashes the steam, which in turn shoves that piston down.
Right.
Do you know, Shaziz, a guy showed me a trick on these little German mopeds that we used to play around with back in the day. And if you could get the engine doing about 13,000 RPM, you could actually take the spark plug out, literally. Or you'd pull the cable off of the electricity that was leading to the spark plug. And if you kept the throttle up full, the engine would keep running.
Yeah, that's because compressed air produces a massive amount of heat.
Yes, it do.
And if you don't believe me, folks,
it was hot enough to combust the fuel without an electrical spark.
Yep. If you don't believe me, folks, go out there and find somebody who has an air compressor that's been running for several hours and go over and put your finger on top of the head of that doggone air compressor.
Not a good plan. I've done that.
Yeah.
There's some dummy out there going to try that, and he's going to be a big blister on his finger.
That's right. He'll have a blister the size of Texas. They say everything's bigger in Texas, and you'll be able to run down to Texas and say, "I must be a Texan. Look at this blister."
Really?
Yeah. I ain't trying to be rude to people, but I'm getting mad. I'm impatient. I'm tired of waiting around because I know how to do this, And if anybody out there wants to do it, then you want to make you some money, I'll give you the design. I get the first prototype so that I can prove to the world that I was telling the truth all along. All right? I don't care about the money portion of it.
Well, Shaziz, the great part of that is you get the first prototype and then you go and show everybody else, which is free advertising for the person that funded it.
Yeah, see? There you go. That's a plus.
Unless they want to bury it.
Yeah. Well, I get the first prototype, and it will specifically say that if any dirty deeds come down, like I suddenly get poisoned or whacked, and I own their entire company and all their family assets, and it goes to my family. So there you go, man. Don't try to whack me, because I'm gonna own everything you own. Even if I'm dead, I'm gonna give it to my family. So,
you know, the thing I mentioned about using electricity to split water and hydrogen oxygen under pressure, I mean, you know, let's do it a little better. Let's take some free, totally free energy. Let's go in a dumpster behind a donut shop and grab some donuts, put them in a bucket, blend them around, throw some yeast in there, seal it off. The carbon dioxide is going to come out of there. It will have, if your container will hold it, it'll have enough pressure to push water 400 feet in the air with energy to spare.
Yep.
Well.
All right, here's an idea.
How do you handle them?
Get a doggone engine out there. Get two engines, all right? And one of them, what you need to do is plug off the exhaust. Alright, and just put a tablespoon of water down inside the cylinder so that there's no way that tablespoon of water can get out of that engine. And then take that other engine and crank that second engine over at its highest RPMs and just let it run. Just keep on letting it run. Make sure you got oil in it, alright? When that water finally gets hot enough in there to flash into steam, it will still have steam pressure inside that doggone cylinder. And at some point, when that, you can only atomize that so many times, when you get past the steam pressure, you're going to crack that hydrogen and oxygen.
Well, wait a minute. First off, long before it cracks into the hydrogen and oxygen, it's either going to do one or both.
Blow a head gasket?
Blow the head off. Or blow holes in the piston.
Well, and that's what the point I'm trying to prove. If you actually make it to the point when it separates the hydrogen and oxygen molecules from the compression and the heat, it's going to ignite that hydrogen, and it's going to blow that motor head right off the top of that engine. All right, so you know that at some point you're going to, if you produce enough heat, you're going to separate the hydrogen and oxygen. That's a fact. So,
you know, what's that toy that they make? And a lot of people on YouTube, I mean, I've seen 40 or 50 videos of people making it. It's a little fire starter, and where you take a little piece of pipe, a plunger,
ramrod.
Yeah, and you take a little piece of charred cotton, stick it down in there, put your plunger on, and just smack it one time with your hand, and it comes out just glowing red. Start the fire.
I like to see one of those. That sounds like another nifty toy, man.
Yeah.
Something else to think about. Instead of trying to use two little engines or something like that, just get a dual cylinder engine or one that's got many cylinders.
Yeah.
You use a few to burn the gas. You turn your valves and everything so they don't react when you don't want them to. And just pick your timing. Pick which cylinder you want for what timing of extraction and do the rest of your work there.
Yeah,
hey, I was a redneck living in North Carolina, and I didn't have an air compressor, but I did have an old car that the engine ran, but the car wouldn't go up and down the road because it was all wrecked and everything, and I didn't have an air compressor, so I did exactly what Scott said.
Yep, use a cylinder to make an air compressor.
It was
that aren't acting right and aren't burning fuel, just go ahead and back the valves off so the suckers won't open.
Right.
You can leave the exhaust where it'll open and close. It doesn't really matter. Just put a little carbon in your cylinder once in a while. But, you can make, instead of using fuel where it's not getting burned, just go ahead and make the engine more efficient. You got a four-cylinder, it's now a three-cylinder.
I got a friend that was doing that kind of deal. He had a doggone V8 and then two of the cylinders, two of the doggone valves collapsed on there. And so he drove around a six-cylinder.
Yep. Just take the spark plug out.
That's in my trooper. I'm sick of smelling fuel.
So take the spark plug out. Seal off the intake and exhaust. Take the spark plug out. Put a piece of pipe in it. Put a T on it. Put some check valves on it. If someone goes down, it sucks air in. If someone comes up, it pushes air out the other way.
All right, well, a Briggs & Stratton engine, you could probably buy one that maybe smokes a little bit or whatever at a garage sale, and you could use that to run some tests to build one that runs off of hydrogen. Once you get it all worked out, then everything's fine. And if anything goes wrong and you warp the heads or whatever, you know, then you ain't lost much. So right. There are ways to test that theory.
It's just a Briggs.
Yeah. So, you know, heck, man, even the weed eater motors, you know, I showed a video that I took a weed eater motor and I was turning it over with a 120 volt drill. All right, now this drill doesn't have a lot of RPMs, and all you got to be able to do is overcome that compression and get that up to speed, and you can bring that operating temperature inside that cylinder up to over 180 to 200 degrees preferably. Then once you start injecting water into the deal, that water will instantaneously flash the steam, and you can actually see this engine start to buck where it's trying to turn itself over. Yeah. Now, if I could have done something a little bit different, because I wasn't sending it into a fine mist, I was more or less putting the water in just like you would regular gasoline, all right? And so that kind of was counterproductive to what I was wanting to do. I only was able to get it up to about 160 or so degrees because I wasn't spinning it fast enough. But if I could get that a decent electric motor hooked to that weed eater motor that would spin it up to some serious RPMs in order to raise that temperature up quickly enough, I could run the water in there just through the same exact carburetor that you would have used if you were using gas. You see what I'm saying? And once that operating temperature gets up high enough, then that thing will run directly off of water. Now, people say, what are you talking about, man? Well, go look at how they actually refine crude oil into gasoline. And keep these words in your mind. Hydrocarbon. What's hydro mean, guys?
Water.
So there's water in your gasoline already. And the reason why they don't want you to have water in your gasoline, well, here's the reason why. Because if the water has too much power, if you get too much water inside there, it will literally scorch your cylinders and warp your pistons in your head because it gets too hot.
Well, here's another thing, too. Most cars nowadays, automobiles, that is, are fuel injected, and water molecules are so large they won't go through the injectors.
So, there you go, man.
So that is why they put alcohol in your gas. So, water will not mix with gas.
And a gasoline engine isn't designed to cool your cylinder down for burning a higher octane fuel in there, right? You have to specifically design it to get more oxygen into that deal so that you get a cleaner, smoother burn off of this deal.
So here's something about, you talked earlier about using gasoline fumes instead of gasoline to run a gasoline engine. Back when we had lead in gasoline, people don't realize that lead is not a natural thing in gas. They deliberately put the lead in the gas because the material that the valves and valve seats were made out of could not handle raw gas. They would burn up. So they put the lead in it to keep the valves and valve seats cool.
Yeah, and it makes sense because lead is a soft metal, and so that soft metal would actually kind of help the rings from wearing things out so fast.
Right, but now with the invent of chrome moly, which would take the heat. They started making valves and valve seats with chrome moly metal, so it would take the heat. So now they don't have to put lead in the gasoline. And if they don't have to put lead in the gasoline, then why are we burning gasoline? We need to be burning the fumes, because that's what where your power is.
Yep, and it'll run a heck of a lot more efficient.
All right, now here's the thing, Shazam, like you said, you're running on water, on steam. So what you do is you run it on fumes and water. And you got to get your timing right. When it fires the gasoline.
Well, there's a guy out there.
Then the water goes in. After, well, because there's your heat.
There's a guy out there on YouTube that is doing water vaporization, vaporizing gas in the deal. But what he finally figured out was that he could mix water and gasoline together. He could shake it up. Just put a tiny bit of gasoline, just enough to get a combustion started. All right, and then the rest of it was water. So he was running the majority of that engine off of water itself. The only thing the gasoline was for was to get a little bit of those fumes in there to basically start the fire.
And give them a little bit of heat, because a little bit's all you need. Because you're already under pressure producing heat. All you need just a little bit more to make sure it burns properly and all of your water turns to steam. And you got to be careful how much water you put in there.
Yeah.
You blow your kids off.
Well, and that's why I say if you figure out a way, like that fogger that you brought out here and showed me, the one that makes a really super fine mist, that would be a perfect system for testing water fuel.
Yes, it would. It would.
Because it only took 120 volts to get it started. So you're talking less than a coffee pot right there to get that thing to run.
I think it was 120 volts at, 3.4 watts.
Yeah, but in reality, have you looked inside there to see what the actual circuitry uses? Because you know that like a 9-volt, an 110-volt alarm clock that you plug into the wall only actually runs off of 9 volts AC.
What they call a modified sine wave inverter plugged into your cigarette lighter. I had one that was, 40 watts. And I plugged it in the cigarette lighter in my car, and I put the water mist, it was a sonic water vaporizer, I put that in the floorboard of the car, plugged it in, and it works like a champ.
Well, there you go, man. See, and all you needed to do, you don't even have to compress anything at that point. All you did need to do is find a way to feed that fine mist into an intake. Right. The trick to the whole deal is to make sure that it doesn't condense back into water before it actually gets there. So you'd want the shortest path or a really good insulated path to keep the temperature warm at all times.
I'm going to inject a dumb warning here. A lot of people that don't want you to do this will tell you, well, you put that water in your engine, and it's going to do this, it's going to corrode your rings, it's going to corrode your pistons, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. Well, does that mean that every time there's a heavy fog or a rain that we don't want to get out on the road and drive our car? We do. But people don't realize, they don't notice it, they don't pay attention. When you drive through a heavy, very, very heavy fog, your engine runs smoother.
Yeah.
Your gas mileage climbs up. 2, 3, 4 miles for the gallon more. I mean, people realize, put it in there deliberately.
There's a reason why your doggone car seems to run better in foggy weather and in the winter.
You know, steam effort. You're getting the extra added energy from the steam.
Well,
guys, just on a slightly different note, you're talking about hydraulic pressure.
Right. Steam pressure.
Well, not necessarily even steam pressure. And I put a link in there into the chat about hydraulic mining. Now, back in the 1870s, using gravity through chutes, which were gradually reducing pipes and
right. I know where you're going with this, Dean.
They had a force of 5,000 pounds.
Yeah,
that was... I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the whole mill pond with a mill wheel.
They were actually blasting away whole mountains.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. They're blowing away whole mountainsides with that deal. Some people were getting ticked off because it was jacking the landscape.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, it was flooding farms and fields and burying rivers in silt. But you don't necessarily need 5,000 pounds of pressure to turn a wheel to produce electricity.
No, you don't.
How many pounds do you need? Can you use gravity and water to produce electricity? in a very, very simple form.
They do it every day.
Yeah, and using...
Hoover Dam does it every day, 24 hours a day.
Get you a 5-gallon jug, 2 carbon rods, and 2 rods to connect those carbon rods to, 3 batteries in series making 36 volts, run up 3 amps on an arc underwater, and you'll be making liters per second of something almost like HHO, except it has carbon monoxide in it. But when you burn it, the carbon monoxide is gone and basically increases the volume of oxygen in your room, so it's breathable. It's something you can burn inside.
Well, I was thinking more of...
Not bad for 3 amps, 36 volts.
Well, Muddy, I was thinking more along the lines of something like Shaz's stator motor setup, where you're spinning a flywheel through water pressure to produce the electricity.
Well, see, and it don't take that much for a pump. If you got a positive displacement pump, a displacement pump is a pump that the water can only go one direction.
Right.
All right? It forces the hydraulic pressure out the other side. It can't come back. There's no way it's going to come back. And if you spin it up to some serious RPMs, you will build up some serious pressure on the other end. It sucks to be the guy holding the hose.
Tesla's water diode, yeah.
Yeah. And so, with that said, we have the technology to build a pump that would put the pressure out like Steve's talking about to turn turbines. And, you know, if you take and add in all these other things like cavitation, you can actually raise the temperature of that water just by spinning it around.
Yep, I did that.
So if you got a massive amount of water pressure and you shoot it into a tank, and that nozzle as it's coming into the tank is at, like, let's say a 45-degree angle, it's going to ricochet off the side of that tank and create a vortex inside that doggone tank. And that water will be spinning so doggone rapidly that you'll get that cavitation effect. The water temperature start raising up. You see what I mean?
Don't you
remember?
I took 1 pound of water, I measured it, weighed it out, 1 pound of water, put it in my blender, put the blender on puree, and for 20 minutes, when I put the water in there, it was 42 degrees. 20 minutes later, it was 92 degrees. 50-degree increase. That's 50 BTUs. Because 1 pound of water, 1 degree Fahrenheit, 1 BTU. Cavitation, just moving water, will cause it to heat.
Well, a turbo in modern-day hot rods and even diesel engines uses like a Venturi effect to actually bring in air from the outside. Now, a turbo in a gasoline engine and a diesel engine both work off the exhaust pressure. So when the exhaust is coming out, it runs through the turbo, which turns the first turbine on one side. The opposite, that's also connected directly to a turbine on the opposite side. These two are separated from each other. So your exhaust goes out one way, and then it sucks cold air in from the outside and pressurizes that cold air, and that compressed air then in turn has to go down through a cooler, so you're not ramming hot air down into an already hot engine. You just warmed it up enough to where now you can force a whole bunch of fresh air and oxygen down inside the pistons to where you get a boost. That technology right there, combined with everything that we've already mentioned right there, would literally give you everything you needed. Enough oxygen to keep your cylinders cool enough, and enough pressure and enough fuel. You know, you could atomize that fuel with the same turbine that you're using to bring in the fresh air. You see what I mean?
Yep. Shaz, our ancestors were not stupid. Pretty much up until the Industrial Revolution, most towns, villages, even cities were based on a river, because the flow of water was a source of energy.
Oh yeah.
Well, and if you actually look at there's an idea out there about the pyramids being a hydroelectric energy device. Not it, because they said there weren't no soot marks for torches where somebody would be lighting the place up. So either they had electricity, or it wasn't what everybody thought it was. But if you actually look.
that's actually a conspiracy theory of a giant loincloth running around with a freaking great big light bulb.
Well, maybe so, but that even that hieroglyph, that picture right there, wasn't inside the doggone pyramid. It was in one of the tombs.
You know, I heard a theory one time. There was no proof whatsoever that it could have been done, but it was suggested, and mentally thinking about it, reasonably, it could be done. They took pieces of shiny metal or stone or whatever and used them like mirrors and reflected sunlight down in there.
Well, yeah, you could do that. You could build some sort of fiber optic system. Water, light will travel through water. You can bend it around the corner. You know?
Well, that was the system that was developed in the Philippines for the shanty towns where they got tin shacks. Instead of kind of electrocuting themselves, trying to hook themselves up to an electrical system without really the adequate knowledge to do it safely, they just cut a hole in the roof and put a 2-litre Coke bottle in and filled it with bleach and water. And it was equivalent of a 60-watt light bulb during the day.
Yep.
A light won't leave.
My pallet shed, it gets pretty bright in here.
I've heard that from Steve.
Well, that's the whole thing, man. Even if you lived in a totally subterranean house, you could still get sunlight in there, you know? So that theory about lighting up the pyramids with solar or sunlight, it's highly plausible, you know? And I would like to put together, you know, they got a group out there called the Geek Group where they actually got a compound where they go to build things, you know? I'd like to get one of those for our people, you know, to go work in, you know, and just build a bunch of different examples, like taking some tubing and just making it in all kinds of crazy, ludicrous zigzags, and on the outside it will show, the sun will be shining in the outside, and then you'll have light on the inside, just to prove that, like fiber optics, I mean, everybody heard of fiber optics, they send data across light, all right? Well, you think that those cables are in a straight line? No, they're going up and down ravines and all the way up under the ground and around the corner, and they're shipping this light around the corner. So if you can do that way, why can't you do that with sunlight? You can pipe sunlight anywhere in your house, even including the basement.
Yeah, you can.
See what I'm saying?
Yep.
Hey, I got something for you. So you were talking about the cavitation. There's a shrimp out there called the manta shrimp, or mantis shrimp, and it has a spring action on its claw, and it hits so hard when that is released, it creates cavitation, it creates plasma, it also creates a spark, and heat. But the deal is, if the shockwave, if it's in one of these thick-walled aquariums, one hit from that claw will crack the glass. Yep, that's the manta shrimp. It is something else. It's real hard to find something that you can keep it in unless it's like metal or something that'll bend. So that's the manta shrimp. It makes light.
Well, metal. There's a lot you can learn from nature,
so the
man.
Plasma and electricity and something else and light.
Effectively, I saw something similar to that, Muddy. Effectively, what they're doing is the water-based version of breaking the sound barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It moves so quickly, there's a shock wave that runs in front of it.
Right. And then when it hits, there's a vacuum.
Yeah.
Because the claw stopped, and it's not perfectly shaped to what it just hit. So there's another vacuum there, and it creates even more.
I'm getting ready to add Thomas Anderson to the call. Another brilliant individual. Look, a person's body runs at 98.6 degrees, all right? And inside your brain, there is electrical storm going on inside there. And so your body in itself is generating electricity. Alright, you got water in your body, so you have not only a flammable gas, but a highly implosive gas inside your body. People always wonder about that deal where people end up spontaneously combusting, you know? Your body will even produce methane, alright? And so, you know, you're a doggone energy generator. You personally.
Yep.
And if you could take any voltmeter on millivolts and sit there and hold it with your finger and start thinking about doggone voltage rising up on there and watch the voltage rise up on there. It's not because you thought about it. It's because while you're thinking, you're using more electricity. You see what I'm saying?
You know, that brings up a point that I've made many, many times. Years and years ago, I used to study and practice hypnosis. And then one thing that I got into was the fact that, well, what you say, that the human body actually generates electricity chemically through your nerves, senses on your fingers and your whole body. And this electricity travels up your nerve to your brain. And that's just it. It travels in one direction, meaning that it's DC, direct current. And all direct current sets up a magnetic force field. And that's why blind people know when somebody walks into a room, because they can feel that magnetic flux on that human body. Where sighted people don't feel this because they don't need to.
Well, not only that, they pay attention to their other senses, which the acoustic wave, they can hear you come into that room before you actually get there because of that acoustic wave.
But your body's moving, setting up a wave field in the atmosphere. Yes.
Can somebody try to add Thomas to this call?
Yeah, he was just there. He just disappeared. Let me see what I can do.
All right. I think he's in now. You there, Thomas? We're live.
Yeah.
So don't be a foul mouth heathen.
Grabbing some ice. I gotta grab some ice. I'm gonna sit back and listen so I can catch up to what you guys are up to.
Here's the thing, Shaziz. If people put off different force fields because of their attitudes and the way they think and this, that, and other, plus the body movement set up different waves in the air. And that's why even people that are born blind, quite a few, to not only know there's somebody coming into the room, they can, if there's somebody they know personally, they don't know who it is.
Yep.
The body. There have been experiments done where people have been in isolated bomb shelter-style chambers where there's no sound, there's no anything, and people hundreds of miles away have sat in front of a TV monitor and watched somebody in this room, and the people in the room feel like there's somebody watching them.
Yeah.
There's this kind of strange thing that goes on with brainwaves where it kind of goes into like a subspace zone, if you like.
So
it's like the twins where they can feel each other's feelings on the other side of the planet.
So essentially, just like a radio transmitter / receiver, all right, your brain is thinking something. You're actually producing a magnetic wave around your body. I mean, some people call it an aura, you know?
Right. I was looking for that word.
But well, I call it
aura, the magnetic force field of your thoughts.
Frequency.
Right.
Same thing.
If you tune two Tesla coils to the same frequency, they'll resonate.
Yeah. Here's the thing. When you think in electromagnetic radio waves.
So and you essentially,
out, and other people can pick that up.
Essentially, all day long, every day, you're sending out waves. You're part of that. Kind of like, you ever wonder how bees and ants and all them talk to each other? You know,
right.
You don't
right.
ever hear them having a conversation, but somehow or another, they're able to communicate and work together as a team. There right. is no reason why humanity couldn't do the same exact thing, because we have that energy from our brains, you know. We're thermoelectric generators.
Your radio in your house is not a radio. It's not a transmitter. It's a receiver. It receives that weak radio signal from that tower 50 miles away, and it amplifies it. I honestly believe that with man's knowledge and technology of electronics today, you could actually build a device that could receive the thoughts of another person, amplify them, so that you could actually hear that person's thoughts.
I believe it too. You know, it's as crazy as it may sound, you know, you talk about people being long distances away, like a mother is in one state and a daughter is in another, and one of them gets hurt or scared or something like that, and instantaneously the other one knows about it.
Uh-huh. My mother was that way.
you need to be receiving AC instead of DC, because you're not gonna get the you need the magnetic flux change in order to have a change. When you receive your radio wave, you receive an AC, and then it's rectified and then amplified.
Yeah, but see, the doggone difference
between... Say the brain wave works, and it's kicking off DC. So that's the hardest part about it.
The doggone thing about AC and DC current is, in reality, the only difference is that you're turning one on and off fast, and so the wave is going out and collapsing. You know, that's AC current. Well, you can do the same exact thing with DC current. You can flip the switch on and off. Tesla did it. Any belt pressure up inside
pulse
the doggone coil? Yeah, pulse DC, AC current, one and the same. But in reality, if you took it down to a micro level scale, what was actually going on with the electrons and the energy flow, it's all the same thing. AC and DC current.
DC will act exactly like DC.
With that, you'd have to get a fast switching diode that has a really low slew rate. A real fast slew rate, and you know, it'd be a little expensive. Then you'd also have to realize that you're in the microwave range, so that would even take a dish and taking a regular area of disturbance and focusing it down to one to make a receiver.
Well, just like you can't hear your, like if I'm listening to 98.9, I can't listen to 101 the Fox at the same exact time unless I got two radios.
Scotty, why wouldn't what you're talking about work if you went above the microwave range? You go above the microwave range, it's not dangerous anymore.
You'd be receiving something else.
But every single frequency range out there known to man could have a receiver for it. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, you got to be tuned into the radio station before you can hear it. All right, our electrical generators are our doggone electrical appliance. Overseas they use 50 hertz, and over here we use 60 hertz. You know, so many cycles are actually occurring. You know. But anything above that, the frequency is too high and you'll burn stuff up because the frequency and the voltage starts to spike, and then you'll burn off the doggone insulation off the wire and mess it up. So we need to figure out better ways to produce the frequency that we want without having to work so doggone hard to get the voltage and the current and the watts and the amps that everything requires. Right now everything's designed so crappily, if that's a word, then it's inefficient. You know, we're wasting more energy than we're actually using. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I know that's exactly what you mean. Yes, we waste far more energy than we actually use.
Well, then that's the time about somebody needs to start figuring out that you don't have to have the magnetic field like 3 feet outside the electric motor to run that electric motor. All you have to do is have those north and south poles interact with each other. So that they repel one another. That's how we get our rotors to turn. Changing that magnetic field, you know, the north to south, you know, opposites attract and positives will repel themselves. So if you get two positives, it's going to cause the rotor to spin. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So you take that same exact motor that takes 120 volts AC to run, you can turn that same exact motor with a doggone DC, pulse DC current. All right, and you can turn the same exact motor with less. I've seen them X13s turn off of a 9-volt battery. Now, are they turning at the full capacity of what that engine's capable of? No, because you don't have, you know, you got one that's already set up for 120 to 220 volts AC, and so there's a lot of windings to get through. You know, reduce the windings down to where it doesn't require that amount of energy to run, and make it so that it will run off of 9 volts. You see what I mean?
Yep, I do.
Be right back.
That's why they got 12-volt electric motors, 36 or 24-volt electric motors, and 36-volt electric motors. You know, you could still run a 36-volt motor off of a 12-volt car battery.
You know, the beautiful part about DC is just what you're talking about. You take an AC motor, 110 volts, and you put 80 volts through it and try to do any work, and it's going to burn up fast.
Yeah.
But you can take a 48-volt DC motor, and you can put 6 volts through it, and it'll run all day long.
Yeah.
And it'll do work. It won't do as much work, but it'll do work, and it won't burn up.
But it has to spin.
That's right.
It might burn up if it doesn't spin.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, right. You overload it until you stop it, and it will burn up. But I thought, as long as it's turning.
300 feet of extension cord on your drywall screw gun, right. It's going to burn up.
Yes.
Especially if they got the trigger in halfway.
Right.
Okay, now let's analyze that for a second. Why will it burn it up? Tell everybody
because why. The armature needs cooling. Once you get to a certain amount of amps going through the wire, it has to dissipate it. If the armature is not spinning fast enough to get enough air through it to cool it, it will burn the armature up.
Hold on. Yeah, there's something else there, too, though. If it's not spinning, that a motor that doesn't spin, when you're talking about those DC motors, that means that basically the power is basically stuck running through the same coil, and it doesn't get a chance to shut off by switching over to the next coil. So, or just basically pulsing with the AC motors, it's not getting a chance to pulse.
So there's
so without right. Well, no, without the pulse, that means the heat is not twice the heat. It's an exponential growth of heat where it just keeps going up and up and up and up, and it's not getting any relief.
Yeah, you essentially just created an induction heater instead of an electric motor.
Right, you need to pulse that thing in order to make the motor run. With the DC motor, there's a bunch of coils that all have brushes up against them, and as it rotates around, it switches between the coils, so whenever one coil is being energized, the others are getting a chance to cool off.
Alright, let me point something out real cool to you guys. Alright, now, how many of you guys realize how a heating element in an electric stove works?
Yes.
Alright, now, when you first turn your electric stove on, you get a dead short. All right, and so that produces resistance, which in turn produces heat because the energy still flowing through that doggone heating element. But in reality, what occurs is there's a softer metal inside that doggone ceramic heating element that it liquefies. It literally turns to molten metal. And so unlike an electric copper wire, which has a kind of a varnish color, whatever you call it, resin or some sort of varnish, enamel, yeah, there you go. That enamel will break down after certain temperatures. If you could figure out a way to design a coil of wire exactly how the stove wire is the element in electric stove is functioning to where the copper is literally liquefied inside the shell, you would have the perfect electric generator, because you could bring that thing up to screaming temperatures, 300, 400, 500, 600 degrees, and still not burn that motor out. You see what I'm saying? Because that now not only because the electricity flows on the outer skin of the copper wire, because the inside is solid and it's harder to get those electrons that are compacted to be able to wobble back and forth because they're in there all bunched in together, right? And so now that they're liquefied, now they're loose. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of having 29 electrons and the last one being loosely coupled, now you have 29 electrons that are all loosely coupled. And you want to talk about a superconductor, you'll get a lot of energy going through there. Of course, you're still going to have the heat.
Your electrons really do flow on the outside until you get to you start upping the voltage and the resistance goes down. Then it'll start doing the tunnel effect as well, hitting the stuff on the inside, and that's where you're not dissipating heat, because there is no surface on the inside, and it adds to it, and you wind up getting a thermal runaway, and it will blow the wire.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You just proved my point, because that's how one of two things happens whenever an electric motor or even an element will burn in half. Is because it gets hot enough that it basically liquefies the metal and it breaks. Or the first one being the insulation on the deal. The insulation breaks down and now you got resistance that you got a dead short.
Right. Yeah. Usually what happens is that the wire burns on two of those wires that are pushed up against each other, and as soon as that happens, a spark can jump across there, and that arc is actually what burns out one of the wires.
Yeah.
And your resistance is less, so therefore your amps go up each time you short to a new wire.
But if you could keep that wire even in a molten state from ever burning up, that motor would last forever. There ain't no way you'd burn it in half. If you take a look at how them elements work, if you think I'm crazy, take a hacksaw sometime, saw off a little bit of that little deal. Don't cut all the way through the element and heat that thing up. Turn it on, all right? And you will literally watch liquid metal start dripping out of that element. And that element, once it gets hot, is allowing it to be more efficient because it's liquefied. The electrons in there aren't crammed in anymore. It's not a dead short. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But you gotta have resistance before you'll get the heat.
Well, yeah, it's when it's cold, there's your resistance. And once you get it hotter, you still have the electron flow, and that's the key. You know, like the redneck hot tub that I did, all right? The redneck hot tub used the coffee pot element, and it heated more water than it should have been able to. And the reason why is it brought the temperature up gradually, but it maintained the same exact temperature at all times and kept rising. And so when it was all said and done, a completely full bathtub was so hot you couldn't even stand inside of it. You actually had to turn the doggone thing off, and it started cooling down a little bit. All you had to do is turn it right back on and bring that temperature back up to where it's your comfort level. But the fact is, once you got that heating element in that stove up to temperature, and that molten metal was inside that core was liquefied, all you had to do is keep a little bit of current flow in there to maintain the temperature on there. You see what I mean?
She's there. No, the simplest thing to do is find the thermocouple that keep the water at the same temperature and change it out to a lower temperature, and then you don't have to turn it off and on.
Well, you've got your thermal cutoff.
Right.
That's going to regulate it up there, and that's a little bit warmer than you want to swim in.
Right, so you just get one of those thermal cutoffs, like Scott's saying, at the temperature you want, and just replace it, and you have a genuine redneck hot tub.
Well, if you notice,
a 5-gallon bucket I stuck the whole coffee maker in, it worked real well. And it just, you didn't hear it burgling or boiling or anything. Just got up to the temperature I needed it, and I grabbed it by the plastic top and pulled it out so I didn't get shocked.
If you notice, inside the doggone, and yours would work for the same reason, Muddy. If you notice, if you take a coffee pot element apart, or take a coffee pot apart, you look real close, you'll find this little round gizmo on there. That is basically like a thermometer. It turns it off when that element gets too hot. Like, say you run it low on water. It's not good. Because if you don't turn it off, if the resistor or fuse don't pop in there or whatever, if you don't turn it off, that element will literally destroy itself. It will continue to build heat. Like Thomas mentioned earlier, it will continue to build heat until it finally destroys itself.
Right.
So there you go, man. And the reason why I said that what Muddy was talking about is because he's actually got this thing submerged in there, so that that thermostat that actually keeps it from destroying itself, it's never going to get hot enough until that water finally reaches that hot zone. And by that time, you got steam going on. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And it only took 120 volts AC to do it. You didn't have to have a 220-volt AC deal unless you're just impatient and you don't want to wait a few hours for the water to bring itself up to temperature.
Wait a minute. They make a 12-volt coffee pot. coffee maker.
Well, there you go. It'll do the same thing.
You plug it in your cigarette lighter, and it'll sit there and perk you out a cup of coffee.
It's like your car. Your car takes so much amount of torque in order to get down the road. All right, and so when you first punch into it, that's when you're using up the most fuel because that's when your car is working harder. But right. The faster you go down the road, the less that it has to put in to keeping you going down the road. When it gets to a certain point, when you're on the freeway, that's why you get so many better mileage on the highway as opposed to in the city. You're starting and stopping, so you got to keep that force going. Well, when you're on the highway, you got that momentum going, and it doesn't take near the fuel on the highway to keep you maintained. All you got to do is just keep your foot on the pedal at the same deal, and you'll remain at the same speed, but you're using less fuel. You see what I mean?
I had a friend of mine that when he would drive down the highway, I mean, on the interstate, and he'd go, I mean, he was constantly pushing the gas, running up 5 miles an hour faster, and then he'd back off the gas until he slowed down. He'd run up 65 miles an hour and let off the gas until he slowed down to 60. Back and forth, and he got like 9 or 10 miles to the gallon in his truck, and he was complaining bad about how bad the gas mileage was. I said, let me drive this daggone truck for a little bit. So we filled it up, and I drove it, and then we filled it up again, and I was getting 18 miles to the gallon, twice. How'd you do that? I said, you dummy. I wasn't going,
Accelerating, decelerating, so you've got to work harder.
All right, held it there. Just hold it there.
Man. That's what they do on these solar races, and they got these really light cars. They'll sit there, and they'll go ahead and get it up to speed, and then they'll coast for a long time.
Right.
But they're a little bit more aerodynamic than the truck.
It takes almost no energy. In fact, once you're moving, the only thing you have to overcome is the friction of the air and the friction of your tires on the road.
Mm-hmm. All right, so check this out. Muddy was talking about putting a water heater on top of his roof, all right?
Right.
Yeah. Now, check this out. If somebody had some doggone common sense, you could take that same exact deal and use a coffee pot element for during the daytime, the sun's heating that water up. And then at nighttime, you could use a coffee pot element and a thermostat to actually regulate if you only want it at, let's say, 110 degrees or whatever. All right, well, you could have that coffee pot turning off and on throughout the night in order to maintain that water until the sun comes up the next day. So now you just took away a big fat heating element, which is inside of every hot water heater out there, that takes a lot of energy to keep that thing going. You see what I mean?
Less than 1,500 watts.
My mother and father-in-law live just south of Florida, Mexico, and I went down there a few years ago and put them in a solar hot water heater. 600 feet of half-inch black plastic hose up on the roof. And like you said, during the daytime, from 7:30 in the morning until dusk, 140-degree water, wide open half-inch line, never run out of hot water.
Well.
Never run out. But I didn't put it in the tank. So come nightfall, they didn't have any hot water.
So if you would have put in a tank, you built a tank like a thermos and had that thing so insulated that heat couldn't escape. And if it did, it would be such a gradual deal. You could make it all the way through the entire night without having to run out of hot water unless they were using it continuously.
Whoa. This thing would heat so much hot water that if your tank was large enough, it would not only get you through the night, but it'd get you through the next day when it was cloudy and the next night.
Well, if you use that same concept about the redneck hot tub, then you can turn around and have it use one day of the week to heat your water for the entire week.
Right.
You got a surface area on top of the water, which just...
what is it?
You had some bubble wrap, and you laid that across your water. Now you'd have something that would store your heat better.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man, it was below zero outside, and there was steam coming off my redneck hot tub.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, I know this can be done. Now, if you take just the heating, if you took your hot water heater off the grid using what we're talking about, and instead use the equivalence of a coffee pot element that would only be there just to maintain the temperature. That's it. That's its only purpose. It's not there to heat the water up. You got it already up to heat, operating temperature, and all you want to do from that point on is just maintain that temperature.
All right, wait, Shoes, I need to say something very, very important to the listeners. All you people out there that listen to Shaziz and believe him, he's right. Those of you that are naysayers that want to condemn him, he's not saying free energy here. He's saying just a more efficient use of it, okay? I just want to make it clear so he can get a bunch of naysayers jumping on him.
Yeah, it's that's all I've been saying all along. And the electric motors and the generators that we use them so inefficiently. If you're generating waste heat, then that is inefficient, period.
Hey, you know, hold on.
You air condition your house with a window unit, you're generating waste heat. Now, we go back to Scotty and we take the waste heat and we pump it over to a Stirling engine.
There you go.
There you go.
And then we put a grid-tie inverter on it, and we pump the electricity back into your air conditioning and drop your air conditioning electric bill by 30 to 40%.
Let me ask a really stupid question.
You have a lot of storage time and everything for that. But here's something. A lot of times people want things, just like your Humvees and all your SUVs, they got to have power. And they wind up with something that is what? A gas guzzler. And you can't take it anywhere without spending a lot for gas. But here's the thing. Some people think they got to have that instant hot water.
Right.
Moved into a two-story house that had four bedrooms and a mother-in-law apartment in the back. And the people who had lived there before didn't pay the gas bill, which wasn't regular natural gas. It was one of those LP gases. They came out in the truck and they pressurized your tank. So the hot water heater was LP gas. The cool thing about that is most of your electric hot water heaters are using well over 3,600 watts and kicking, and it takes about 15, 20 minutes to heat your water. So if you look at the design of the tank, in the middle is a pipe, and it's just like a long bead. It's just got another pipe right down the middle of your tank, and inside that piece of pipe is a wavy piece of metal that bounces the air back and forth as it goes up, and that's to create friction against the side, so the heat from the flame will bounce off the sides and accept the heat into the water.
Mine.
So basically, what I did was I took the top off the flue, and I got a 750-watt hair dryer from a garage sale. I spent $5 on it. I stuck it down in there, and then I let that piece go. I left that piece in the middle, but I lifted it up, and I stuck the end of the hair dryer down there, and then I let the weight of that bind the hot water heater. I plugged it in. 15 minutes, we had hot water that you didn't want to put your hand under. Only 750 watts.
Right.
And the cool thing was, if I left it running, we could take shower after shower after shower. Who needs 3,600 watts?
Muddy.
When I can only use 750.
Muddy, you just gave me a multi-million dollar idea that I'll tell you off the air. But let me ask a ridiculously stupid question. All right? Check this out. The Germans tried to kill us with the Volkswagen. You know why?
A boat flag?
Volkswagen. The first Beetle. You know why? Because they used what we were talking about in the process of being able to put heat inside that car. They wrapped a metal shroud around the exhaust pipe of the car, and they took away the exhaust to actually heat the inside that Volkswagen. So it was fine when it was brand new, but after rust gets on there and rust a hole in there, now you get carbon monoxide inside the Volkswagen. So an older Volkswagen can kill you if you're not careful. But hold on. My point is this.
Okay.
Now, you run an alternator on your car right now, all right, and that runs off of belts, and that the belts are connected to the main pulley. So that means that when that alternator kicks on, your engine has to work harder. Now, my stupid question is this. With Stirling engine technology, why is it that we haven't built on the side of an internal combustion engine, which produces a massive amount of heat that will put a blister 10 times the size of Texas on your finger if you touch it? All right? Why don't we have, on the side of that deal, a Stirling engine-style gizmo that will literally turn that alternator just by the heat generated off of the doggone thing? When you're driving down the road, you got cool air coming by, and so if you vent some of that cool air into that system, there's your temperature difference right there. You see what I'm saying? The heat off the motor, the cool air from the outside, and now you have the doggone Stirling engine running strong enough to actually turn your generator.
Yes.
Your rate of heat exchange simplified for you just because you're rolling.
Yeah. See what I mean? And if you were sitting still, the heat outside, if it's 110 degrees outside and that doggone engine is a couple hundred degrees, that's still going to have enough temperature difference to turn that Stirling engine.
Yep.
So you're going to take what would have normally been completely wasted heat that you're trying to dissipate by using a radiator and a fan to try to get that heat away, and you're going to use it to generate the electricity that keeps to maintain your battery. All right? Now, if you've done this properly, you could literally build an engine to where you could actually take the entire radiator completely out of the doggone thing and use every single bit of that waste heat. There's so many different methods by which you could actually, you know, using the Venturi effect that I'll talk about, the heat forces out one pipe, it sucks cold air in the other pipe. So now, like the air-cooled engine, why is it that an air-cooled engine doesn't burn up? It should. There's no fan blowing on it. You see what I mean?
Yep.
But since
you have a radiator.
There was a company in Ireland in about 2010, 2011 that managed to get to the public market a instant hot water tap.
On the car?
No, in your house. Your wash basin, your shower, you know, kitchen sink. And effectively what they're doing is they put a 3 kilowatt element into a small device that heats water as it passes over it, instead of heating a 20 litre tank of water.
Right.
Independent tests claim it's 97% more efficient than like a 10 gallon water tank.
You're talking about a tankless water heater?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Your issue with that is that, and I know this because we have one here, I installed it myself, the tankless hot water heater has a gizmo inside of it that basically lets it know whenever there's water running to it, and when that water pressure drops below a certain threshold, it shuts off. And yeah, if you turn on the cold water, it's a nightmare to try to adjust it to where basically it does not shut the thing off, and you end up just getting cold water. You can't just get warm water by mixing cold and hot water unless you have two separate taps, which I have never seen a showerhead that does that. So it's almost impossible to basically get a decent shower without going in there and actually turning the temperature of the hot water heater down to the temperature you want it.
Well, it sounds
you
like
should
a,
know, dude. You should know. You just got done installing one.
It sounds like a design flaw to me. But I don't understand.
Yeah, we'll run under a certain level. What we need is something that basically has a switch, where it's just on all the time whenever you turn that thing on there, until you flip that switch and turn it off again, and it's built into, like, say, the handle, so that whenever you rotate it around, it turns it on. Whenever you turn it all the way back to the off position, it turns the element inside the hot water heater off.
Well, looking at the specifications of this, the ambient temperature range is between 50 to 60 degrees Celsius. And 60 degrees Celsius is inappropriate for most people.
Well, you know, here's Jim Clugston. He's got a place out there in Canyon Creek, and he put one of them instant-ons or tankless water heaters in there. He got the smaller one because he's one of them frugal people who like to save as much money as possible. And he got it on. He said, man, it's barely enough to where you can take a shower. I said, well, turn the hot water down. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, on the input to your heater, just turn the ability for flow or the current down. I said, and it'll have longer to heat the water. He said, that ain't going to work. So I went right over there and I turned the sucker down. And I said, all right, now turn your cold water down. Let's just see how hot the hot water gets. We turned it on there and it burned his hand. So, yeah, you had to learn. The deal is you're dealing with low wattage. That means you have to take more time to heat the water. And it was just a simple thing. So, yeah, you want hotter water where you can make tea or coffee out of your doggone tap? Turn the flow down a little bit.
Yeah, but in the long term, if you're talking about electrical expense, such as what you're going to pay on your light bill, if you was patient enough, like, you're going to be sleeping, 6 or 8 hours a night anyway. You use that 6 or 8 hours at night to heat your water tanks up, and you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You'll have it when you need
it. This is also one of the magic things of a Stirling engine. You start putting load to a Stirling engine, and you've only got so much power coming into heat going into the engine, and you're getting the heat out the other way. The deal is, once you put a torque on that engine, the RPMs go down, but the torque goes up.
Yeah,
and it's longer to heat and longer to get rid of the cool. It's kind of an auto adjust. And I think that's pretty cool. It's one of the things that make the Stirling engine such a efficient engine, or motor, shall I call it.
If you turn that doggone Stirling engine into, like the one example that I put as far as building a device on the side of that motor, because you know that motor is going to get hotter than heck. All right, that's why we got to have a radiator and a fan. But if you take that doggone deal and you build a Stirling engine to not actually directly charge turn the generator head, instead use that to build up pressure inside there, that heat pressure's got to go somewhere. All right, it's how that Stirling engine is turning. You could actually pressurize enough air to then in turn use a completely different system with a turbine, like the turbo itself, in order to spin that sucker. You see what I'm saying? And in this whole process, we ain't done nothing that's out of the realm of scientifically provable. All we did was take the energy and move it, not once, but multiple times.
You know, I'm going to tell you something. What you're talking about, everybody refers to as a heat engine. And that terminology right there really blows my mind, because it's not a heat engine. It's a heat differential engine.
Yeah, like the Peltier engine. It just works out temperature difference.
The other side.
The thing is, a heat engine works on the difference of heat. It's not how much heat you can put in it. It's, can you get the heat out as fast as you can put it in it?
That's why your caloric engines and your Stirling engines did better on the boat, because a lot of people try to run these things with a 55-gallon cooling tank, and there's just not enough surface area to cool the water, and basically the whole thing gets hot. But out there on the water, they take that water that's just passing by, and they just let it pop right on through the water jacket, and they are very efficient then.
Very efficient.
They kick, and enough to run the doggone boat whistle as well.
Well, an internal combustion engine will flat out destroy itself if it ain't cooled down. And if you ain't moving forward, if you're sitting in traffic, then it's going to get hotter. Watch the temperature gauge during summertime when you're sitting at the traffic light.
And you cool it too much, the block will crack.
Yeah. So, too rapidly. Like, you got this hot old engine and you slam into a giant old mud hole.
Yeah, get nervous to hit the water like that.
She says, I took a small bore motorbike about 50 cubic centimeters over the Swiss Alps in 1997. And because of the change in the altitude, the lead-based petrol that was the fuel system for it was bubbling through the carburetor.
Wow.
Seriously. For lack of oxygen.
Yeah. So, we know the basic science of it all, and the physics are there. You don't have to defy any of the laws of physics to get free energy. All you got to do is pay attention to what's going on out there in the world. If you can look up at the sun and you can tell me that I'm crazy and that there ain't no such thing as free energy, I'm telling you, you didn't pay attention in science class. Because in a science class, they told you that the Earth is millions or billions of years old. And so we, like I said earlier, we came from nothing into some little squiggly thing in the water and worked our way up to being fish and then lizards with legs and then monkeys and all the way up to man. So that sun has been burning for a long, long time. And if it lasts more than my lifetime, to me, that's free energy because I didn't have to pay for it. I didn't have to pay for the sun. You ain't having to pay for the sun. Ain't nobody out there having to pay for the sun. Now, governments of the world might figure out a way to try to tax you if you try to use the sun. But in reality, you didn't pay for that. You didn't pay for the tornado with the 300-mile-an-hour wind that blew your house over. All right, into the next county. You didn't have to pay for that massive flood that came through and washed out your entire town.
Yeah, right? you didn't build that.
Yeah, you didn't build it either.
You're looking at all that energy, and you didn't build a day off that.
Yeah, and what about that earthquake, you know, that shook the whole building to the ground? Did you pay for it?
I was talking to an architectural engineer there, my buddy, friend of mine out in Asia. And I asked them a very simple question. How difficult would it be to design a house that in the evidence of an earthquake would automatically jack the house up on stilts? And they said, from an engineering perspective, it wouldn't actually be that difficult because you have ball bearings under your foundation. So if the ground shakes, the house shakes with it.
Well, that's how they build bunkers. They build bunkers that are sitting
now, on
rollers.
Top of that, Once that house starts shaking, it automatically jacks it up. And they said, the engineering process itself is not that complicated, but getting permission to do it is.
Yeah.
In the past 40 years, they've been building skyscrapers, 25 and 30-story high skyscrapers, sitting them on Teflon. So when they have an earthquake, a small earthquake, the building doesn't move, just the Teflon underneath it.
I saw a documentary a while back. I think it was either Japan or China that built one that had a pendulum in the center of it that would actually counteract any motion of any swaying.
Whoa.
Clever engineering principles out there, but there seems to be some sort of reluctance to allow people to build these sort of buildings that are set in.
The reluctance is this. First off, if you have an insurance company that's going to charge people insurance for insurance to protect them, then you can get taxes off that insurance money. If you can sell fossil fuels, you can get taxes off that fossil fuels. If you can sell water, you can get taxes off. Anything that can be sold, you can get taxes off. And that's the whole perfect of the system, you know, and the planned obsolescence. The more it breaks down, the more you can sell replacements. And this is how the system is set up. And so it ain't that we can't build things that won't last. There's light bulbs over in Europe that you can't buy over here because the ones over in Europe say they'll last for 10 years. You see what I mean?
Yeah, you get a 15 or 16 bulb economy pack, and by the end of the month, all of them are blown, and you're ready to go out and get more.
Yeah. So
they're cheap, but you're only getting what you're paying for, and it's like four bulbs worth.
Recently,
some of the lights on my roof terrace were replaced, Shizzies, and they were previously incandescent bulbs that were then the, what do they call them, the energy-saving bulbs, the coiled bulbs. But now they've been replaced with 15-watt LED bulbs.
I have in my possession an Edison bulb that is at the very least in the early 1900s. And it, to this very day, still works. All right?
Well, that's the deal. You see, it didn't allow as much current to get through, so it didn't burn as white hot. That's the thing. You buy something from China, rather than having two stages of amplification, they try to get 2,000 gain out of one stage of out of one transistor, and so that's why it's so cheap. But the thing is, if they backed it off or wasn't trying to go for go for that much gain, it'll last a long time. The Edison bulb burned a cool kind of yellow compared to the bright white that we got now. And here's the deal. I used to work for Datatronic Control on them huge message center signs that had 50-watt bulbs that are like 3 inches apart. And the sun would come down, beat on the black surface of the pans that all these were in, and then the wind would come across, collect all the heat to that, and you're also baking in the sun. And so you're already up there sweating and praying for a nice cool breeze. The wind would come across, collect all that heat, and about scorch you. And these things, I had one, it was a two-line sign, so that means it had two masters and two slave sides. And these bulbs, I had to go up there, and I replaced every 2 weeks about seven cases of light bulbs. But you take these light bulbs home, these are the really long extended life for sign bulbs. I've still got like a half a case of these lights that I took out of some of these, and they still burn now. But they just don't burn all the way. And the cool thing on the message center sign, you don't want to be blinding people at night, so they put a timing phase to one of the phases of the electricity, and wherever you adjusted it to told the bulbs how much current they're actually able to receive. So at nighttime they burned a lot dimmer, but you didn't notice it because it's nighttime. And in the daytime they came up, and we never brought them up to full brightness, and we saved quite a bit of money on the bulbs. We weren't replacing seven cases a week on this one, every 2 weeks on this one sign. It went down to like one case, and that made quite a bit of difference. Just that little bit of, why turn a stereo up to 10 every time you use it? We're taking it down to 8. You really don't notice the difference in the volume, and it's not as distorted, but that stereo will last a long, long time.
With that said, Muddy, somebody do some research and answer a question for me. Why is it that the United States uses 60 hertz and overseas they use 50 hertz?
Because 64 hertz is where everything resonates with light. If you if we went to 54 hertz, we wouldn't get as much heat out of the transformers. We wouldn't be wasting near as much electricity, and things would actually work much better.
And last longer?
Yes, at 54.
Sure is.
Yeah.
Didn't Tesla say that 60 actually does hurt?
Yeah.
But apparently something like 67 is beneficial to the human body.
Okay, Shaziz, to answer your question, to analyze what Buddy said, okay, because if they did 50 or 54 hertz, the companies would not make as much money selling you stuff that would burn up at 60.
There you go.
Hello, China theory.
So if you want to know why it is you don't have free energy and why it is you feel like you got to come around and foul mouth an old crazy haired guy named Shaziz because you think he's stupid, then you need to get out there and realize how industry actually works. There's a word called planned obsolescence for a reason. There is a reason why you can't sell no drugs if ain't nobody sick. You can't sell no guns, ammunition, and bullets if ain't nobody fighting. There ain't no way you're going to sell brass knuckles if somebody don't want to knock somebody out. All right? That's it. That's why you don't have free energy, and that's why your college education tells you that the laws of physics are written in stone, and maybe they are, but we're not talking about violating the laws of physics. We're talking about using the laws of physics to our advantage.
Yes, exactly. Just make things more efficient.
I'm a firm believer that if you made your transformer to resonate at 7.54 hertz up to 7.83, which would be the Schumann resonance, we'd also be resonating in the frequency close to where time resonates. And if you had antennas on that, you wouldn't need to plug into the electric company or anything. I believe it would continue to run on its own. It'd be collecting naturally by the frequency. But that's a pretty low frequency.
You know,
studied it. I've gone over it, went in and out, and I believe 7.5 hertz to 7.83, the earth would run your electricity for you. It's not for the energy, but it is free to you.
In the old days, we used to take a firecracker and a pork and bean can and a coffee can. We put just a tiny bit of water in the bottom of the coffee can, poke a hole in the pork and bean can, wedge that firecracker down inside there, and light a match. And we could send that doggone pork and bean can 50 to 100 feet in the air. That's physics. All right, now imagine you take a pogo stick and use that pretty much same deal and some of the things you've heard about on this show. You could literally have a pogo stick that the moment you jumped on that sucker, you'd launch into space.
We're talking flubber here.
Yeah.
Low RPM piston, it fires every time you hit the ground.
Yeah. With some piezoelectric in there to produce a spark, kind of like your barbecue igniter, and as you're jumping up and down, you're generating electricity that's producing hydrogen inside that doggone tube that the shock is made out of, and once that thing builds up enough pressure in there from you jumping up and down and ignites, we'll see you on the moon, brother.
They did actually do tests of a nuclear launch vehicle, space vehicle, that would use atomic explosions to, if they were timed rightly, to accelerate past the speed of gravity.
See?
Sweet.
I'm kind of glad they didn't actually use it, but...
But either way, the power potential was there.
My pogo stick was gasoline. That thing would probably come up and hit me in the chin.
Well, you were right, Shiz. The laws of physics are written in stone. And they were brought down from the side of a mountain by Charleston Heston in 1959.
Either way, look, I'm just saying, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. Look, just because you don't think a car can run on water doesn't mean it can't run on water. You just haven't been paying attention because the farmers were running their tractors on water when they were trying to save on fuel. Necessity is the mother of invention. Yep. And if you're building an engine and it gets so doggone hot, you got to shut it off every once in a while, then that ought to tell you something about real over-unity. That doggone engine, without some of the cooling portions on there, will literally destroy itself. It will keep building heat, just like an electric motor will keep building heat if it's not turning. If it ain't turning and it ain't got some sort of wind or the current being able to switch from this coil to that coil, then it's going to be an induction heater. It's going to keep on heating until it destroys the wire and the motor then ceases to work.
Here's the other part of that, Shaziz. If you got an electric motor and it's already spinning up to its RPM, it's using very little amps. Until you put your hand on that shaft or whatever and start putting a load on that electric motor, then you'll watch the amps go up, just like when you first started up. The amps peg that meter and then slowly come down as it gets the speed. So if you don't have enough current going in or voltage going to it and you're putting a load on that sucker, you're pulling a lot more amps to equal that amount of power that you're trying to use out of it. If the amps times voltage equals power and you dropped your voltage, you're going to be pulling more amps.
So the answer...
Slower RPM because the voltage is lower. Your voltage is what controls your RPM.
So what you need really is an automatic rheostat that slowly puts the juice to the motor so it slowly winds up rather than say wham!
Right. That would do it, but it would take longer to get up to RPM, but it wouldn't blow everything.
That's my point. Speed is waste.
Right.
The faster you want to get something done, the more you're going to waste.
Well, right.
Take your time and do it right.
That's the deal with the X13. They were saying it doesn't just and it helped it last a lot longer because it didn't just jump and turn on abruptly like it sounded like an amp hit the thing. It would come on slowly.
Right.
I talked about taking the energy off of a generator head that you want and not allowing it to go back into that generator head. And what we've been talking about and the explanations that, or the examples that we've been given is exactly that. Taking the heat off the side of the gasoline engine and using it for a different purpose. There is no direct coupling between the side of the motor and a Stirling engine gizmo that would be mounted on the side of that motor. There's no direct mechanical coupling that would cause that motor to have to work harder than it already does. And,
right.
And so, with that said, if you design the your generators to get what you want off of it, but don't try to take it directly off of it, you know, like the video that I did where I took a squirrel cage fan and a leaf blower and an X13 and I mounted them all together, when the blower motor was blowing, it don't matter if you reached in and grabbed a hold of that that fan and kept it from turning. That blower motor will never use any more energy than it took to use it to start with. So there's no direct coupling. Excuse me. Oh, I got to get a coffee.
Well, if I can jump in there for a second, guys. When I was fiddling around with hydrogen, I was trying to run a small little gasoline generator, like a 2.7 kVA or 2.2 kilowatt gasoline generator on hydrogen. And I couldn't produce enough to get it run purely on hydrogen. But what I did is I fitted a Y valve in the carburetor between the fuel pipe and my hydrogen generator. And the way I used to test the load was to put a 3 kilowatt kettle on it.
There you go.
Because it was overrunning it. Now, once I added in the hydrogen generator into the Y valve from the fuel line to the carburetor, it actually ran, instead of about 12 hours on a full tank, it ran for 18 hours on a full tank. Plus, when I put the kettle on it, it was a 2.7 kilowatt kettle, I think, in the end, because I've tried a 3 kilowatt and it was running the engine down and it was laboring so much I was worried about damaging the engine. But once the hydrogen was going in there, it increased the fuel economy by nearly 50%, and it gave it more power.
Well, what's to stop you from using just the engine to do nothing more than generate heat? All right, what could you do with that heat? What could you do with that heat? Back in the old days, what they did with heat was they burned coal and they turned water into steam, and which would turn turbines and then turn generator heads. So,
well, before GlaxoSmithKline became GlaxoSmithKline Wellcome, I worked in the Wellcome Foundation in Dartford, and we had to put some scaffolding up inside a gas turbine generator room. And this is a huge, great big thing, about 40 feet long, about 20 feet high, that was using pressurized gas to turn a turbine to produce electricity for the factory. And that thing was noisy. Seriously noisy.
Hey, Steve. What do you suppose would happen as far as your fuel economy if you didn't run gasoline through that generator, but gasoline fumes and your hydrogen? I bet you that thing would run for 48 hours.
And here's another deal. While that doggone thing's running and you have like a water jacket specifically designed on that engine to, instead of sending it through a radiator to cool it down, to disperse that heat, you take that heat on into your house. Now you took what would have normally been a generator that you don't even have to use any more electricity, which would pull an extra load on that generator. You're just using the engine itself to take that heat and use it for your house.
Now, wait a minute. So you don't just put it through a radiator. You put it in a tank, and then you cover the tank with Peltier devices, tanks, and put a fan on it. So that now the heat goes, it comes into your house, but it has to go through the Peltier device first, so it's making electricity and heating your house.
So you run the fans on your radiator systems in your house off of the heat that is coming off of that system.
Exactly.
With the summer,
no electricity necessary.
Here's something I have to backtrack just a bit, but this is something a lot of people don't think about. You got your vacuum cleaner or a blower. It doesn't matter. It's got that squirrel cage, okay? We'll basically talk about the shop vac. Okay, so you're sucking up water and air and all that stuff, and that little ball floats to the top. and all of a sudden you're listening to the shop vac, and it lets you know that it's full and that that ball is blocking it off, and it goes from boo, goes woo, and people jump. They get scared. It's going to blow the motor. Quick, turn it off. That's about the opposite stupid thing that anybody could think. Because here's what happens. Why would the RPM go up? Because you've taken the load of that centripetal force of the air spinning around, and it's not going out the end. So now it's just spinning around in a circle. None of it's leaving. No new stuff is coming in. You just dropped the amperage. That's why the RPM went up.
There's another deal. Instead of using the doggone generator to actually turn a generator head, use it to do two things. One, to turn a generator head that is not going to produce near the energy that the big generator head would do, but use a shaft to turn a squirrel cage fan. So all you're going to do with this generator is blow air through a duct system that's going to circulate air through your house. All right. The other portion of the generator is only going to be used to run lighting systems and small, really super small appliances. You're going to take the heat off the engine for the heat in your house, and whenever it's summertime and you don't need that heat in your house, you'll take that same heat and make a heat exchanger system that will cause a evaporative cooling and cool your house down. That's what the doggone outside your house, what do they call them? Oh, heck, you know what I'm talking about, heating and cooling.
Swamp coolers.
Yeah. And so...
I got one of them.
So essentially... Instead of using that generator to run your house directly, you use that generator in the most efficient manner. You're using, instead of having to use electricity for a fan, you're using the actual axle turning on a squirrel cage fan, which is forcing air through your house, which already causes the cooling unless you have heat involved with it. And so you're not going to put this generator head under the same load that you would be if you was trying to run your entire house on. Matter of fact, I'll even put my neck on the line, and I will take and say that I've got over at my shop, I've got a, I think it's a 3,500-watt generator. And I will take that entire shop over there, and I will heat it, cool it, and light it with that 35-watt generator, including freezers. All right.
Well, you know what you've done? You skipped the electrical to mechanical and mechanical to electrical, 45% difference going two times.
Yeah.
Just taking it to one.
And so an LED lighting system in that entire house isn't going to cause that generator head to drop on its face every time you turn it on.
Yeah. So in other words, if you had a wind turbine or a solar panel, and instead of turning it charging the batteries, which you're only going to get two-thirds back out, and also going through an inverter, which is it loses efficiency as well. You take that electricity, you put it right to that hot water heater element in the tank, and you're not losing anything.
We'll capture the exhaust.
So you're taking it directly off the shaft. Instead of going through two conversions, you're just using it.
We'll take and capture the exhaust off of that thing, run it through a catalytic converter system that will build up heat intentionally to use for cooking on. So your exhaust will be outside and your cook stove will be outside, so you don't get carbon monoxide. But just to prove a point, we could take that any generator, any existing generator right now, and make it super efficient to where it doesn't burn near the fuel. The only time it's going to burn more fuel is when it has to work harder under load to force that doggone generator. Because the more you turn a light, more lights you turn on, the more stuff you plug into it, you can listen to any generator bog down until eventually you overload it and it'll drop on its face. All right, so we'd take this generator, modify it slightly to, if it's an air-cooled generator, we'll wrap some coils around it to capture the heat off of that engine and take that heat away from that engine and use it where we want it. We'll use a lighting system on the same generator system that won't bog the generator down. And as far as freezing your food right there, we'll use compressor technology to actually cause the compressor to do the same job that it already does, but not having to use electricity to do it. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, I'm saying you could take any generator, a 3,000 watt generator, would heat and cool your entire house.
And supply you with electric lighting.
Yep, electric lighting, and heating, cooling, everything.
Your average electric use is anywhere from 1 to 2 kilowatts. That was like 8 years ago here in America. Now it's up to about 3, because people just don't care about efficiency, and they figure it's so cheap. It's 13 cents per kilowatt.
I got a friend.
Don't really use much. Everything else that, if you're working with heating or cooling, that's where your big inefficiencies are.
I got a friend out there who is completely off the grid. He got in a fight with a power company, and he went out and bought him some diesel generators. And the other day, I was over at his house, and he went in to fuel up this doggone generator, and it was so screamingly hot inside that shed that he had his generator going. And I'm like, my God, you could take that dang heat and you could heat your house instead of running electric heaters in your house, or even wood for that matter. You could cut down on your wood burning use. You could cut down on your electrical use just by taking the heat off of that doggone generator while it's running and give that generator a break.
Yeah.
And not use near the fuel.
Yeah, baby. Hog trees don't burn them.
Yeah. Unless they've already fell over, then you can burn those.
Off-grid forced to be green was Jim Clugston. He had to keep his wife's breathing apparatus going all night. So we put 2 wind turbines up there, but some nights it didn't blow. So it was basically the main deal of keeping the batteries, and that's the hardest thing about the off-grid system. But you can take these lead-acid batteries, and if they're down to like 10 volts at their final rest, dump the sulfuric acid out, rinse it out again, but put some baking soda in it, and you go through that about 3 times until the baking soda doesn't bubble up anymore. Then you go ahead and rinse it with some regular water and give it a final quick rinse with some distilled water. And you take some alum and Epsom salt, and you put it into, you put about 8 ounces to a gallon of water, refill them batteries. And these things are no longer using the metal as fuel. It's just a chemical reaction due to the catalyst. And these batteries will last you up to 50 years. They will go up to 16 volts, and the bottom voltage is 8 volts, but they will continue to pour out power throughout that spectrum. Pretty cool to know.
Alright, I'm gonna commence Operation Prove It. Alright, now, if anybody wants to join me in this doggone deal, then we'll do it. Well, Operation Prove It is essentially this. I'm going to try to build at least a shack. I'm going to try to find I got a couple generators that I can use. I'm going to modify these generators, and I'm going to run the same equivalence of load on an identical generator at the same time, and show the efficiency that these two, the difference that they'll make. When one's modified to take the heat off of the engine and use that heat for your house or heating or cooling, and the other one is actually running the appliances required to do the same exact job. So 2 identical sheds running 2 identical generators with the exception of the modifications on the one that are going to use that generator to its maximum potential as far as efficiency, and the other one to see how far you can push that engine without having to use near the amount of fuel.
You're going to double or triple it, hands down.
Yeah.
It's so expensive. Your electricity.
One last thing on that deal is that once we show that the energy, that the savings that you get, the however, whether it doubles, triples, or whatever, Once we get done doing that, then we're going to pull that doggone fuel, that which is the gasoline, off into a vapor and do it again.
Shazam.
Yeah.
What is, does your motor have a screw-in muffler?
Yeah.
I need the thread size and the actual diameter, and I want to build the muffler.
Cool.
I'm going to build a muffler with using a 3-inch by 3-inch square tubing. I'm going to put a piece of 1-inch round pipe through the center of it, seal the ends so we put water or vegetable oil in it, that would screw it into the motor. We'll have to build some kind of support to hold it, and then line the entire outside with Peltier devices.
Cool.
That's cool.
Well, you have actually done it.
Here. I don't have to buy a daggone thing. I've got everything here I need to do it with.
You can actually double down on that, Raymond, because if you, let's say you take the pipe that screws in, right? And then you take some copper tubing, fill it up with salt, and put a tightly wound coil around there, around that pipe, and then turn around and get all that salt up out of there. Now you've got a deal you can circulate water through. Then you take that system that you just made right there and you put it into some square tubing and take the Peltier elements and put them on the outside of the square tubing. Now you got a pipe that you can screw in there that's going to take the heat off as far as water or liquid being circulated through, and it's going to take the heat because as you can see, that the temperature, the further you get away from the actual exhaust pipe into the coil and then into the square tubing, finally to the Peltier element, won't generate enough heat on the outside to destroy the Peltier element, but it will still give it the temperature differential to produce the electricity that you want. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. My idea was to take a piece of sheet metal pipe about 8-inch diameter and put it over the muffler with the Peltier devices with their heat sinks on them, and put a fan on that. One or two of the Peltier devices could run the fan, like a little computer fan, would cause it to cool better. That hot air that is blowing off of that would be piped over to a Stirling engine.
Let's simplify and make this nice and simple and quick and easy. Take the take your exhaust, get you a gas hot water heater, and do just like I did with that stupid little hair dryer.
Right.
You'll have hot water like you wouldn't believe. You can pump that through pipe that has an insulator on the outside to your little radiator in the house, and heat your house there as well. And anywhere along the line you want to put your Peltier devices, just go for it.
Because
that gets hotter, then it's not going to suck as much heat out of it.
Run the exhaust.
It's going to be there and readily available for you.
Run the exhaust through some catalytic converters, and that way any excess fuel that isn't burned up in the combustion portion will heat those catalytic converters, which you can actually use for cook stoves. But then take Buddy's design and run the exhaust through the pipe inside the hot water heater to transfer that hot air as it's coming through to heating the water up, and then run that exhaust out for you. Realize how many times we can loop that?
More heat.
The thing is, I thought we were going to run this thing off of gasoline fumes and hydrogen.
We're going to start off by running it off of gasoline just to prove
prove
that we can bring the efficiency up incredibly.
Okay, so we're going to take the engine and put it in great heat. We're going to modify one thing at a time and test each thing and then see what the total comes to.
Yeah.
Right? The question is this. You could put a third shed up and get a hipster with a samurai top knot to sit on top of it in the yoga mat and think great thoughts, and you should be able to power the whole town.
Yeah. One generator should be able to do that.
Keshi says it works.
Well, Keshi says you have to love your reactor, or if you're a jerk, you don't get free electricity. So I don't like his plan.
That's why you get a hipster, because they're so full of it that maybe it'll work. If not, it'll give us something to laugh at anyway.
Well, what I'm talking about doing isn't nothing. It's not defying any laws of physics. It's just taking all the waste energy that any engine's going to do. And instead of having that doggone generator head have to work so hard to give you light, then you just change your lighting system, you change your heating and your air conditioning portion of it, you know?
You know, the thing is, the dumbest thing we could possibly do is try to
to defy the laws of physics, because we are counting. We are counting 100% on the laws of physics being true.
Yeah, so there you go. Hey, tell me how a freezer works.
Just like your air compressor.
Yeah, how does it work? It compresses air, produces heat, and forces a gas through a deal that actually creates cooling.
Right.
What's more,
you're still in the body two years, and you've got into the wall. I think I told you once before, when I take a hole, a cut saw, and try to cut holes in composite wood that's got a lot of glue, and you hit it, and you will not get 3/8 of an inch deep, and the next thing you know, the glue's going to melt, and it's going to gum up your teeth. The way I do it, I take my air compressor, pump it up, wait till it cools off, and then the air coming out is very cold. And then I just simply put that cold air on the cup saw. It keeps the cup saw cold. It blows the sawdust out of the way and the glue. And I just drill right through the wood. No problem.
Take your time. Yep. Go slow. Yep. It runs right through. No gummit. No bad cut. No nothing.
Exactly. I mean, your air compressor is an air conditioner. All it's doing is compressing the heat and the air in one container. And so it gets super hot. You let it cool. The air comes out. It's colder. Because you got rid of all that heat.
Well, go study up some.
Have less heat per centimeter.
Go study up some heat pump systems and some central air systems and see what we're saying isn't crazy, because that's how they work.
Hey, his brother made an air conditioning. He had the compressor in his crane that he was working, and it just got ungodly hot in there. So he ran one of the air compressor lines up just behind his head. And it blew cold air. And that thing would build up a little ice pellet and hit him in the back of the head every now and then. And then it would start the process all over, building up more ice.
That was my brother, Scotty.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was saying. Brother.
Here's something for you guys.
Shazes, wait a minute. That little ice pellet that hit him in the back of the head, it didn't hit him but about 3 or 4 times. He learned to listen, because as the ice pellet would grow, the pitch of the air coming out that little hole would change, and he could judge at the right pitch just about where it was going to shoot, and he just blew his head 6 inches from one way or the other, and he'd go right by him.
Well,
learn, adapt.
When you start your engine during the summertime, as soon as you start it up after it's been sitting for a while, run to the back and watch your exhaust and tell me what you see come out that exhaust. Anytime you produce heat, and anytime you have moisture involved with the heat, you get evaporation. When you get evaporation, what do you get? You get cooling.
Condensation,
and cooling.
Yep.
I made an evaporative cooler that's totally free.
So taking everything we know about the internal combustion engine and how fragile they are if they overheat, and we take all that energy that we normally would be classified as obnoxious and waste heat, and we take and use it efficiently, you can take any electric generator out there, already gasoline electric generator, diesel generator, or even a hydrogen generator. It doesn't matter. If it's producing waste heat, you've got over unity already.
Actually, I believe that you could actually produce 3 to 4 times more energy with the same generator with the right adaptions.
That's what I'm saying.
3 to 4 times more energy.
Well, if you're running a 1500 watt element in your hot water heater, that takes electricity. So your generator, the 1500 watt, if you got a 3500 watt generator and you're running a 1500 watt hot water heater, then it'll run that hot water heater. But then you're going to throw on a 1500 watt space heater to get heat out of your same generator. Now you're up to 3000 watts. You're spending money pretty fast. All right, now anything over that, you only got 500 watts left. All right, and so you start turning the lights on. If you got 500 watt light bulbs, there's your extra 500 watts. Anything you put on there after that's going to drop that generator down on its face.
You know, I honestly believe that if we do this right, Shaziz, we can take that 3,000 watt generator you're talking about. If we modify it properly, I'll guarantee you we can get 12, 15, maybe even 18,000 watts out of this kind of bigger thing.
There you go, man. And I believe
8,000 watts to run two households.
I believe it, because I'll tell you one thing's for sure. When I run those generators during the summertime to try to keep fans and freezers and lights going, and I can hear that generator out there struggling every time you turn something on, and then I think about, well, you know, if I wasn't running this light bulb right here, I could shut this light, and that would save gas on the generator. I'd just be without light. But if I take the LED light instead of running that doggone 110 volt tungsten element, 100 watt, whatever, then that generator has to work less. And if that thing's out there getting hot because it's summertime outside, there's an astronomical amount of heat on that doggone generator. And eventually that oil inside that thing's going to fail. Now, what's to stop you from making an oil cooling system that you could actually take the heat out of the oil as well?
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
The oil doesn't boil at 600 degrees. Water boils at 212 sea level. So use oil.
So
that way you don't have to worry about it.
We could circulate water through a water jacket. We could circulate the oil out, take the heat away from the oil, take the heat away from the water, and get that engine to run at a warm temperature instead of a blazing hot temperature. That engine's going to last longer. We could take the heat off the exhaust and use it for cooking, for heating up other stuff. Huh?
Me and Swimmer were talking about this the other day, and we're talking about to get the heat off the thing. He was, I basically suggested, why don't you just go down to the motorcycle shop and find out what they, you know, what oil they use, and a lot of these motorcycles now are not water cooled, they're oil cooled.
Right, they're oil cooled.
Use their figures, their efficiency, their engineer. And basically, all you got to do is just buy what they've already done, and you've got you've got all the advantages of the whole thing without having to put down a single figure.
What they've done is
motorcycles they use about 10 watt 30, 10 watt 40, depending on the model.
They've taken a synthetic oil and designed it to where it will actually absorb heat faster than water and release the heat faster than water and boil at a much higher temperature, so it's far, far more efficient.
It's not worried about viscosity. It's worried about
heat transfer.
Well, ironically enough, antifreeze has a lubricant in there to keep your water pump from burning up.
Right.
So
antifreeze also is designed to boil at a higher temperature and to absorb heat and release heat faster.
Oh, that reminds me, man. When I was doing that hair dryer deal with my gas hot water heater, and I had converted it over, made such a great dealer, I was out there flushing the radiator in one of my taxi cabs. And rather than taking everything, I got tired of fiddling with that little valve down at the bottom, and it was slow. So what I did is, at the top, that hose that comes from the engine going to the radiator, I just took the clamp off. And then I put the water hose into the radiator part. And I said, well, you know, that might be just a little too cold. So, because I don't want to be cracking my block because it's running hot and then put ice cold water in. I just let it circulate and everything. So what I did is I moved the hose, the radiator hose, over sideways till it covered half of it, and then stuck the hose into it. And that water was nice and hot. And with the thing just idling and pumping all that water, it for a long time, for like probably about 15 minutes, and I was really thinking and all these thoughts running through my head. For 15 minutes, I was holding it, and that water never got any cooler. And it was more than you'd really want to have in a shower. So
yeah.
Just car engine idling.
Yep.
And running through the radiator, which helped cool it. I had enough excess hot water that I could have had endless showers with just the car idling.
Hell, you could probably heat your whole shop with it.
Oh, yeah. So I took that technology down to a guy in town that had a big greenhouse, and he made all his money growing stuff. And I said, you know, and he's sitting there looking, and he was talking about how these heaters and all that stuff just cost so much to run. And I was looking out the back. I said, what about this little four-cylinder engine? He said, what about it? I said, does it run? He said, it ran when I sat it there. I said, all right. Well, hook your hoses up to it, run your radiators up here in the ceiling and run your fan. You shouldn't have a problem. And so my friend Steve and that guy wound up doing that, and he said that was the best heating system he ever had.
Well, we're almost down to the wire there again, but before I go, I want to say this. If you get this opportunity, go out there and check out a school bus, how they function. All right. Now, those are some of the most poorly insulated vehicles on the planet. You know, there's not a lot of insulation, single pane glass on the windows. And so basically, when you're driving and it's freezing cold outside and dead of winter, you'd expect to be frozen inside that bus. And until it gets up to operating temperature, you are frozen inside that bus. But yep. Once you get that doggone thing up to operating temperature, I don't care how cold it is outside, you can open up every window on that bus and still be run out of there by the heat. Because they
in front of the rear wheels.
They circulate water through that diesel engine down through the floor into several different heater cores in the back of that bus. And so you're taking on a 65 passenger bus, which is what, 20-30 feet long, and you're sending that hot water down through a circulating system that goes in there, and you can heat that bus up so hot that the kids be telling you to turn the heat off. Alright, that's proof of what I'm trying to say.
I remember it used to burn my feet. I had to lift my feet.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is, if you know that, and you could take any diesel engine out there and circulate water through an old radiator style system, if you could actually design a quick disconnect to your car, let's say you got a diesel engine, preferably, because the doggone gasoline engines don't like to idle for long periods of time because it gets too hot. Well, of course, we're taking away that heat, so it's not going to get near as hot. But either way, a diesel engine has lubricant in the fuel, and so it helps the cylinders out. And so with that said, if you got a diesel engine with some quick disconnects where you can just pull up to the side of your house and just leave the car running, don't worry about it, just leave it running. It's running. Yeah, all the exhaust is outside. All you're going to do is take some electricity and some hot water off of that deal circulating through your house. You could use that heat off of that doggone engine while it's running to supplement your light bill without having to pay a light bill. All you got is left over is a fuel bill from running that doggone thing. And since it's going to be running efficiently, you're not going to spend near as much as you would trying to force it off the electric grid. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, it can be done.
It can be done, Emil.
So, we gotta launch Operation Prove It and basically take a generator and show how we can improve the efficiency just with a few modifications, taking away what would have normally been waste.
Well, she says,
yeah.
During World War II, when they were firing mortars on enemy positions, the tubes used to get too hot. So they used to use the only available water supply they had to cool them down.
Well, there you go, man.
What's going with that, Steve?
Yep, there you go. Well, guys,
there's some things we don't need to prove, lads.
Right.
That's pretty much it. So hopefully you learned something and got a few ideas. Take the ideas and run with them. Hopefully you'll beat us to the punch and save us some work. But regardless, we're going to prove it one way or another. And so with that said, you've been listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com, Awake Radio, People to People Radio, and multiple other networks out there. So thank you for all the ideas, guys, and people in the chat room. Thanks for all the links and all that kind of stuff. And we'll see you next time around. Peace and love. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.